Okay, we continue with the conceptual framework.
Yep, thank you very much, Hans. Good morning, everyone. We're going to be talking today about chapters 1 and 2 of the exposure draft, so the chapters dealing with the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information and the objective of financial reporting. Before I hand the floor over to Yelena to take you through the papers, I just wanted to briefly talk about Agenda Paper 10A. This paper summarises the tentative decisions that you've made so far and compares them against what the decisions were in the exposure draft. We plan to produce this paper for each meeting because, firstly, we think it'll provide us with a helpful summary view of the decisions that you've made so far and keep you up to date with where the project is. And we also think it will be helpful for people who are following the project to see where we've got to and how the decisions compare to what's in the exposure draft. We don't, at any of the meetings, plan to talk about this paper. It's just simply there for information purposes. Unless there are any questions or comments, I will hand over to Yelena.
Thank you, Rachel. So firstly, I'll briefly touch on Agenda Paper 10B, which provides the background for this discussion. At the last meeting, we confirmed that redeliberation on the conceptual framework project will focus on the areas that have proved controversial or where new information has become available. In terms of chapters 1 and 2, we also think it's worth remembering that these chapters were issued only recently, and they have been through an extensive due process, and any changes to these chapters will result in a not converged result with the FASB. So taking these considerations into the account, at this meeting we propose to discuss further stewardship, prudence, and measurement uncertainty. All these topics received a high volume of feedback, and although the response to the AD proposal was largely positive, there were certain aspects that we think require further consideration. After we discuss these topics, we will come back to this paper 10B and ask you to confirm exposure draft proposals on other areas in chapters 1 and 2. But now we'll start with agenda paper 10C, stewardship. The exposure draft proposed to increase the prominence of stewardship in the conceptual framework by bringing back the term stewardship and explaining that information needed to assess stewardship is separate from, can be different from information needed to assess future cash flows. This was done to clarify that both these types of information are necessary to make buy, sell, and hold decisions. This proposal was largely supported by the respondents to the exposure draft. However, some of them thought that even more prominence should be given to stewardship and it should be identified as a separate objective of financial reporting. Another group of respondents disagreed with the proposal to increase the prominence of stewardship. However, this group was relatively small, and we think their main concerns can be addressed in other ways that we will discuss later in this session. So the approaches we propose to discuss today are the following. The first one would be to make no changes to the discussion in the exposure draft. It did give more prominence to stewardship, and it was largely positively received. However, some respondents still found it difficult to understand what increasing the prominence of stewardship means for the objective of financial reporting. So the approaches B and C try to make this link between stewardship and the objective of financial reporting more clear. So the first, approach B would modify the objective of financial reporting to explicitly refer to the assessment of stewardship. That is, the objective of financial reporting would be described as providing financial information that is useful for making resource allocation decisions and for assessing stewardship of management. Approach C would explain this link differently. It would explain resource allocation decisions in a broader way. It would explain that decisions made by holding investments for which the assessment of stewardship is often vital would be part of resource allocation decisions. The basis for conclusion of the exposure draft already tried to make this link, but it was either overlooked or misunderstood. Respondents seem to associate buy, sell, and hold decisions with decisions made at a point of time, and thus they seem to exclude decisions that are made while holding investments. Appendix B illustrates how approaches B and C could be achieved. The staff recommend approach C because ultimately we think that the assessment of management stewardship is used to make resource allocation decisions rather than for its own sake. We also think that it reflects the view that both information for assessment stewardship and information for assessing prospects of future cash flows are needed for resource allocation decisions. So it does not introduce an additional objective of financial reporting. In addition, we think that it would emphasize the importance of assessing stewardship for those who hold investments. That is, it will make clear that the board will not overlook the needs of long-term investors when it develops standards. So question one asks whether you agree to adopt approach C, that is to clarify the link between the objective of financial reporting and stewardship by explaining resource allocation broader as including decisions needed to access other rights when holding investments. So it's...
Could I just ask a clarification? So if we went down approach C, the changes that you would make are those that are outlined in Appendix B.
Yeah.
So there are quite few changes. There are not a lot of changes.
Not a lot of changes. Because basically we're trying to clarify what we already tried to say.
Yeah.
There's not very much in the way of changes.
Yes. We are trying to streamline the discussion. So the first paragraph will make it clear which decisions we are talking about. The second paragraph will talk about which assessments are necessary, that is the assessment of stewardship and the assessment of cash flows is necessary to make those resource allocation decisions.
Because my first reaction was most people liked what we did in the exposure draft.
Yes.
So why would we change it? That was kind of
gut
feel.
Basically to clarify further
that
decisions to
hold
are part of resource
So I'm a bit comforted by what you've got in Appendix B because it's not too radical.
Just to clarify, there are two approaches in Appendix B, approach B and approach C.
Yeah, I'm looking at approach C.
The most important about approach C is the inclusion under 1.2 of C. Daryl?
I agree with where you've landed on the question. Just to the extent that you bring this in, your paragraph 34A uses an example of why you think a resource allocation decision, you use the fact that you would change management. I think it's an equally good example, but perhaps more reflective, that very often in making buy-sell decisions, you make a decision about whether you want to buy into a particular management or sell out of a particular management. I think that if you're going to use that example in anything, in the basis or anything like that, I think that's a better example for explaining resource allocation than changing management.
Okay.
Greg Wolf?
Originally, I didn't support any changes to the current description about stewardship in the conceptual framework. It's because the last paragraph actually tell you the information useful for investors and others, cash flow and others, also useful for stewardship purpose. Only change I will support is to give a clear term that is stewardship, which not appear in the current standard, the current conceptual framework. And any changes we propose, I don't think it's better than the current ones. But since we already went through the process, and I can support approach C, but I will not support the wording. Particularly, let's see the appendix. The approach C, 1.2, C. This is what you propose to add. And that is link the stewardship aspect totally to holding. I not agree with. For the current shareholders or bondholders, of course, they are interesting. But for the potential shareholders or bondholders, particularly if it is so big, investor rather than a very short investment, of course they would feel very much interested in, anything related to stewardship, the the share-based payment or the voting rights or how to, you know, kick out chief executives. And so my suggestion is, you know, to add third paragraph is right, but not linked to holding, you know, solely. And of course, we can discuss in the basis. The current holders, of course, so significant to them, but potential investors, creditors are also important, which we already include in the current primary users group. And this is my first comment, not wholly linked to holding decision.
But we go, those potential investors do not vote. They cannot vote because they don't have...
We go one question here on our assessment. If we do not make explicit reference to why you hold investments, it would be all right for you? Because then decisions to exercise other rights, and then if we cross out why you hold investments, we are not going to discuss if you hold or if you're not, or you do have to have the rights, no matter how...
No, I have the right not to invest, not to buy, not to give you the loan.
You don't buy bad management.
Yeah, this is also a major decision for the potential investors and creditors.
But I'm sorry, it is included. We are describing resource allocation decisions as both decisions to buy, sell, and hold, and decisions exercised by holding. And we are saying that that assessment of stewardship is necessary for those resource allocation decisions, which include all those A, B, and C.
Right.
So we are not excluding assessment of stewardship from other decisions.
And Weiko, well, I agree with your disagreement with the notion that stewardship is a concern only of those currently holding instruments. I do think that that is not what 1.3 is setting out. So if you have that concern from reading 1.3, I think look again, because having said in 1.2 in appendix, sorry, I'm looking at this version in appendix approach C on the last page of 10C, it's saying decisions about providing resources, including deciding to hold, deciding to buy, deciding to sell. And then within 1.3, it's explaining that the assessment about exercising other rights is saying that's another way. It's not saying it's the only way. So I think the linkage that you perceived of restricting stewardship to existing shareholders is not what it actually says in 1.2 and 1.3.
Now, if our understanding is a comment, that is A and B also related to stewardship,
yes.
I have no problem. You know, if only the C, this is what we add now, you know, only C we specifically add to link to stewardship, I would not agree. You know, this is
no, but that's not the case.
A and B are already in there.
Yeah, so just adding C.
Yeah, just adding additional clarification for those who are concerned that holding decisions are not considered. But A and B are already in the text.
Mike doesn't agree with
adding C. Yeah, you know, no. I would agree with adding C.
Sorry,
you know,
wait.
Adding C. Yeah. The problem is, you know, we already in the ED, we already add the stewardship aspect. The people say it's not so clear enough that we split into A, B, C, but originally A and B is more usefulness for the investors, creditors, nothing to do with stewardship. We're not at C, it's more related to stewardship.
It just makes clear that stewardship, the assessment of stewardship, is not only important for buying or holding decisions, but also for actions that you might undertake while you are holding investments. And the concern of many people was that we are only addressing financial information at those investors who are not at all interested in interfering with management or communicating with management and also only want to make buy or hold decisions. this makes clear, well, if you have want to have an active relationship with management and you want to vote on remuneration or whatever, then assessment of stewardship is also very important. That's all it does.
Can I ask a question on that? Because I had a similar issue that Wigwa was raising, and that is, what is the package of information that isn't in the financial statements today that would help you evaluate that decision that Hans is just talking about? For example, voting on management's compensation. What isn't in the financial statements that you would propose under C to add that wouldn't otherwise be there? In other words, a simpler way to ask the question is, why isn't C redundant or unnecessary? If financial the boundaries of financial statements, essentially as we're describing it, deals with providing useful information about, you know, assets, liabilities, income, and expenses, what additional information are we going to add to financial statements that are going to help you?
Nothing. This is just going to clarify existing practice.
So then why do you need this statement then?
Because people were not clear about what we meant.
Yeah. But you're not defining stewardship, so I would contend you're still not clear.
Pat, I think we're just trying to bring it back to, okay, in providing resources to the entity,
right.
Of course the people are going to make decisions about buying, selling, or holding.
Right.
But they're also going to make other decisions based on other rights that might be attached to those investments.
Right.
So perhaps if
it's redundant though. C is redundant then.
But it's not redundant because we're not limited. The resource allocation decision isn't limited to buy, sell, or hold. So it's just acknowledging.
But that's my question. What does it entail? What more information does it entail?
So your view, A.
It's just a clarification. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But you haven't explained what additional information I'm not going to get. Okay, from the financial statements that I need for C.
I think this is as people have already said, that this is a clarification of what we've got at the moment. What we said in the exposure draft, excuse me, was that people need information for resource allocation decisions.
Right.
That information includes information about prospects for future cash flows and also information about stewardship. And that's what we said in the exposure draft. People didn't see the link between the resource allocation decisions and some of the information that they need about some of the stewardship information that they want. We give that stewardship information because actually we think it is part of the resource allocation decisions. It is part of the decisions that they need to make while they're holding the investments. We tried to explain that in the basis for conclusions. The basis for conclusions was overlooked. People didn't get that. So all we're really doing is bringing a notion that was already in the basis for conclusions of the exposure draft up into the main body of the text to explain that actually the resource allocation decisions actually include things, the decisions that you're actually making while you're holding the investment. That's all we're really doing here.
But that's already incorporated in A and B. So that's my point.
People didn't get that, and that's what we're trying to do.
Circular and redundant.
But Pat, all we're trying to do is just make clearer the link between paragraphs 1.2, 1.3, and 1.4. It's not going to change what we're already said that we're going to provide under 1.3 and 1.4. However, people just wanted to know how it links back up to that resource allocation decision, so what we've done is we've just expanded it to include the exercise of other rights that might be attached to the investments.
Because you're not changing the boundaries of financial reporting, I disagree. I think it's unnecessary and begs the question, what information is not now included in the financial statements that I would otherwise need to judgment about evaluate management stewardship?
But Pat, we've already said in the exposure draft in 1.3 and 1.4 that we're going to include information for a user to assess management stewardship.
What is that information?
No, but that was already included in the. That's not what we're.
I understand. What is that information?
But we're not. We're not proposing to change that. That was already there. That's already under the existing conceptual framework.
Or,
all we're doing is clarifying.
For example, qualitatively material information about related party transactions.
Would be standards level.
No, let's not get.
Okay.
Doc.
Thank you. I agree with the overall direction. Approach C provide better idea. However, if I read the draft of approach C, I don't think it's beautiful. I wouldn't say it's ugly, but I wouldn't say it's beautiful, because its confusion is 1.2. 1.2 is talking about objective, but you showed three bullet points, which is not really objective. It is just, how to assess. And also, in the 1.3, there is a duplication of bullet point C. So same wording like exercise other rights while holding investment, such rights, vote, and otherwise influence, just duplicating the same things. So it's not really beautiful. On the other hand, approach B, 1.2 is very clear. This is only talking about objective. It says clearly that we have two objectives. One is assessing, and providing the resources. And B is assessing management stewardship. However, shortcoming of approach B is 1.3 is slightly mismatching with 1.2, because 1.2 is talking about two objectives, but 1.3 only talks about assessment of cash flow. So therefore, it doesn't really link with 1.2 and 1.3. So my suggestion is put 1.2 of approach B into the approach C. So it talks about almost same thing, but it will provide clearly our objective is assessing the resources and assessing management at the stewardship. And then in the 1.3, we talk about assessing rights, the vote, and the influence. So it would make drafting much more beautiful, I think.
I think that's more than beautifying. I see paragraph 1.2 as being fundamentally different, because what it's doing is effectively setting out a dual objective.
Yes.
Really, if what you want is the dual objective, your support is for approach B rather than approach C.
Yeah.
Is that what you're is that what you're saying? So your support is approach B. Okay, I understand.
Mary,
I wanted to say whatever we do not do approach B. somehow I knew Tuck would say that, so I put up my tag before. I would be okay with approach A, sticking with what we had in the exposure draft, if we are going to make a change, and for all the reasons Elena reminded us of in her general comments, I think we should be very cautious about making changes, especially to the objective of financial reporting. If we are to make changes, I think 1.2 is the less harmful one to do, because 1.2 amplifies decisions as opposed to amplifying what information is useful. And so I think that's much more in line with what we have right now. And I think this is the part we're not supposed to be messing with. I also have some other comments about accountability, but I think we'll save those for the other questions.
Yeah, I agree with the solution that has been found. It is just a further clarification. The big problem here is the term steward. It remains the term stewardship. It has translations. But for example, the Dutch, in some languages there is no translation, in Dutch, not in a single word at least. In Dutch there is a translation in a single word. If I would ask the average Dutchman if he knows what it means, he wouldn't, because it's a very ancient term. I don't think that stewardship equates accountability. Two sides of the same coin, but two sides, and it's not the same. I keep on struggling with the language. What it really means, stewardship, is the management or the careful management of resources that are entrusted to you, but that are not your property, your own property. So perhaps that we could say, for example, in 1.3, where we're talking about the management stewardship of the entity's resources, you could perhaps say management stewardship of the resources entrusted to it. It's also the language that I used in the mission statement. And that makes clearer that it is a matter of that the resources are not theirs, but they are entrusted to them by other people. And I think that more clearly conveys the message, or students may also make translation a little bit easier for people. Because basically, it could be management of the and of the resources entrusted to it by others.
By investors and other
creditors. Yeah.
Do you view it similar to a fiduciary response? Do you view it similar to a fiduciary responsibility?
It's almost that. Yeah. So perhaps we can fine-tune the language a little bit here. Yes.
Thank you. I like the direction of travel. I think approach C, paragraph 1.2, is for me an improvement. It is clearer.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only problem I have with approach C is the wording in paragraph 1.3, where we say that the assessment of what future net cash inflows is also needed to exercise other rights. That might be true in many cases, but it's a bit of a stretch and hard to understand immediately. And let me illustrate with two decisions by an investor. Assume I am an insurance company. I buy 10% of the stock of a company. That is clearly a decision to buy, and I will bet that on the assessment of future cash inflows, of course. My next decision is to try to appoint two directors to the board of that company in which I have bought 10%. So I put a resolution to the assembly. I vote in support of my resolution. I win. Okay. The view of that decision is to influence management by having two directors on the board in order to better protect my investment. Is that only based on the assessment of future net cash inflows? Maybe, but it needs to be explained, because the immediate link between every or management decision regarding every stewardship assessment decision and the future cash inflows seems to be an automatic link, and that is a bit of a stretch, I think.
But isn't the sentence before the underlined one also mention not only future net cash economic inflows, but also stewardship?
We say those assessments.
Yeah, but that's the two assessments that are contained in the previous sentence.
Well,
there's two assessments there.
And, well, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, that's fine. Okay, the end is the answer to my problem. Yes, okay.
Good.
Changbu. Yeah, just generally I agree with this approach C. It's a good compromise with the other outside external feedback. But however, if you see that 1.2C, I'm a little uncomfortable with the other rights. Another one is just the investment, because all our stakeholders have some. I don't know. Maybe this investment might include everything, any kind of capital supply. In that case, it's okay. But in the case of A and B, you know, you use some kind of explanation there. So that's one connection to clarify investments. That's not capital, all capital supplies, because the capital claims. Another thing is other. That means, is there another primary right? Because the other thing, you know, it seems to me, there is a primary thing, primary right, and the other thing, so you can exercise some kind of right. So that's a little. It seems to me, you know, this, as Tak said, might be, this might, he prefer approach B, however, but the expression is not so beautiful. That means still you are saying C, a kind of a stewardship thinking, is looking at the as a kind of secondary. Because it seems to me A and B is still their primary maybe decisions, but C is a little secondary. You know. I felt so, you know, when I read this kind of the C here. So that's I'm suggesting other investment. We need some kind of clarification.
Amaro?
Yeah, thanks, Hans. Well, generally, I do agree with the direction. My reading is similar to Pat. It would have been necessary, but if we are being responsive, trying to clarify, I'm okay with that. And I'll make some comments about the wording. I don't like during board meetings. I don't think it's the appropriate time. But since you asked it, then you presented. So one is exactly what was mentioned by Shen Hu. I don't think it's necessary to use the word other rights, because actually we don't make reference to rights before this. So, and just go straight to rights, and I would be okay. Again, I don't think it would be necessary also to use while hold investments, because you can only have rights if you have rights, wherever the rights are. And so I don't think it's really necessary. And I will caution, and again, this is the origin of the language. I would caution paragraph 1.3, I think is far too long and far too repetitive compared to 1.2. And if you go straight to what is underlined in 1.3, we are just using exactly the same words in 1.2c. So it's we are only duplicating in 1.3. We are not really clarifying much. So I would, if we are going to 1.3, and suggestion for staff, have a look and keep only what is really key to clarify things. And what is not necessary, and we just don't use.
Mary?
Just on that, Amaro, I'd love to take a red pen to it, but 1.3 is text that was in the 2010, and I just don't think we should start.
I think we should start reviews if it's clearer, if it's not necessary, if we can avoid repetition without any additional meaning, why keep? We are not changing anything.
Martin?
I'm not really sure if I really like this approach C, because man, with this 1.2Z, I think it could also be misunderstood by people saying, okay, maybe this stewardship information is only relevant if you holding that, because we concentrate in Z on holding. If you are a potential investor, you're also interested in stewardship information, because it is a part of your investment decision. And that is the reason why I don't like it. I understand the purpose. But if we concentrate on decisions to exercise objective while holding investments, people could maybe misinterpret and say, okay, maybe stewardship information is only relevant if you, during the time where you hold the investment. And that is the reason why I don't like this approach so much. When I like the including that, but not really the way how it is done, because
The fact is that you can only exercise those rights if you hold them.
But my point is different, because information about stewardship, you are also interested if you don't hold. If you want to invest in a company, I'm interested in the management stewardship.
Because maybe if we just, instead of holding, the key thing about paragraph C is the rights are attached to the investment, and that's what links it back to the point about resource allocation. If we said something along the lines of rights attached to those investments that existing and potential investors and creditors make, would that resolve some of these concerns about?
With Darrell's example that he spoke of earlier on, if we described he was saying the example we gave about, I can't remember where it was, about stewardship, but if we also talked about buying into and selling out of the management, or words along those lines, that I would hope would address both Weiguo and Martin's concerns, because it would make it clear that the assessment of stewardship affected all A, B, and C in paragraph 1.2.
I think we're also falling foul here, though, of over-reading it, because we know what we have changed, and when somebody reads this whole paragraph clean, they can see the whole thing.
That's right. There's nothing about C.
And not necessarily link the changes to each other.
I agree, because when I read the words, for me, the decision to buy I'm going to think about what I think the future cash flows are. I'm also going to think about how good I think the management is, which for me is stewardship. So I thought it was already implicit in the information I would need to decide to buy. And all we're clarifying is that we also care about the people who are making decisions as holders.
Yes. I mean, that's certainly our intention with the drafting. Our intention with the drafting is to say that all three of these, you will need information about how good management is in order to make these decisions. It just happens that the thing that we're clarifying is the holding bit. And that's all we're trying to do here. It may be that we need to look at the wording a little bit more closely to see if we can make that clearer. We may need something in the basis of conclusions again to try and make that clearer. But that's certainly our intention behind Approach C.
Which is also why I don't like B with the deletion in 1.3, because I think that assessment of stewardship is a much matters for everybody. So I like the fact that it's in 1.3.
Yeah. Yeah, that would, in approach B, would lead to a whole new series of misunderstandings.
May I just comment?
Yeah.
So the basic idea of what you are proposing is understandable. Yeah. However, there might be some concern with the margins and the way it goes. Based on this current wording, it looks like unnecessarily limiting the kind of importance of stewardship based on this, just including just the C. They are saying the steward, what you explained, the same idea, I guess, but the wording expression, might people think, the role of stewardship, the information about that might not be comprehensive. So think about what you have explained to us. This is not just related to current investors. Every investor's capital supplies are interested in stewardship. So what you just have described, maybe put some words here that maybe Martin's and Weibo's concerns might disappear.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think we need to look at the wording because there are a couple of people who had concerns that C was the only thing relating to stewardship, whereas A, B, and C are intended to also relate to stewardship, and we need to look at that and make sure that it's clear what we intend.
Okay, with all the suggestions for the writing of the paragraphs. Who can support the staff recommendation for approach C?
1, 2, 12 in favour.
Okay. So moving on to the next section. The respondents were concerned that stewardship can be interpreted differently and asked whether the conceptual framework would clarify how the board. First of all, we think that approach C would help to clarify the notion of stewardship by providing better explanation of why users need to assess stewardship and that it is needed for the assessment for making resource allocation decisions. In addition, paragraph 41 proposes some other changes that we hope would clarify the notion. First of all, we are proposing to clarify that information needed to assess management stewardship, which can be provided in financial reports, is limited to information about financial consequences of management's actions. And we also propose to include an additional example in paragraph 1.23. It already includes some examples, but the respondents thought that they were too narrow and protectionist and did not include any examples of management actually having a responsibility to create value rather than just to protect it. So question 2 asks whether you agree to modify paragraphs 1.22 and 1.23 of the exposure draft to explain which aspects of management stewardship responsibilities can be assessed using information from financial reports. Any comments on that question?
Question 2, right?
Yes, question 2.
And I have only one, because if we specifically say, okay, that include development of appropriate corporate strategy. Does would it mean by others that maybe in the future we have to make a standard about disclosing a company about their corporate strategy? Because man, that is, I'm struggling with this example. And I know we have other examples, but they are more, I think, linked to what we currently have in financial statements. But if we, taking this specific example, development of an appropriate corporate strategy, I'm not so sure if
too much.
That is what we are really aiming for.
Well, that's indeed, yeah, that's a good question, because that's, for example, what the FRC has developed, a strategic report. But that's something different from what we do.
I struggled with this paragraph, not because I necessarily object to what you're trying to achieve, but I wasn't sure how clear the words were, because to Martin's point, does the combination of the first sentence of 1.23 in that example mean that you want that the financial report should provide information about what the financial consequences of the corporate strategy were? Is that what you mean?
Beyond the meaning that they could provide only information about financial consequences, and they will not provide all the information about it.
So, because I think Martin's concern is, are you now asking that they set out what their corporate strategy is, or are you talking about the financial consequences of that strategy? Which one are we trying to...
Financial consequences.
There is a bit of a danger there, because a lot of people take the biblical term stewardship further, which is taking care of natural resources, etc.
This was my point earlier.
Sustainability reporting.
Because in paragraph 49, later on, you actually acknowledge that there may be some information that may be material for assessing future cash flows that are not necessarily, you know, the same as what you use for assessing stewardship, to your point, Hans. So this is my point, is what additional possible information might you be contemplating? I think this reinforces the concern that is being expressed here, is how broad a package of information are we talking about, or is it just the financial consequences, i.e. future cash flows? So that's why I'm struggling with this whole area. I think there's unintended consequences that, on the one hand, we're trying to be responsive to people and trying to make this, I think, more relevant to them, but at the same token, every word we add has this unintended consequence.
I have some reaction. I think it takes us directly into future-oriented reporting. Providing information about financial consequences means forward-looking information, pretty much. I think it's too direct. What we expect is that the financial reports will provide information that are useful to assess the financial consequences, not direct information about those financial consequences. Because if I want to achieve this objective, I need to provide forward-looking information for any decision I'm taking. A corporate strategy decision, to provide information about consequences, I need to give figures about what I expect as outcome of that decision. That is not the objective of financial reports. The objective is to help investors to assess in their mind what is the effect. Right? So I think we need some more words to just not make the link so direct.
I understand people's concerns, but the example that we've added in terms of development of appropriate corporate strategy, in thinking about what does that imply for disclosures, I mean, the other examples that were already there were talking about, you know, the ensuring entity complies with applicable laws and regulations and protecting the entity's resources from unfavorable effects of economic factors such as price and technology changes. I mean, and we had those in there without thinking that meant you were going to disclose.
Yeah, but I think it's a combination of the examples with the sentence that's been put in front of it. Because then it's asking what exactly is that financial consequence information. So I don't think it's, I agree, if you look at the examples, the nature's similar to what we had before. I think it's somehow this combination of the sentence with the examples.
Yeah.
I mean, the first sentence was meant to be limiting rather than...
No, no.
But it's alarming instead.
Well, I'm just not sure what the financial consequences mean.
Yeah. It's a new term.
Shall we just leave it
here?
Is this important?
I think leaving things as they were might be better, because when I look at 1.23, you know, the proposed redraft that you have on page 15, it's trying to do something that I think we actually, Chung Wu very helpfully having brought along the document, already have, because if we look at 1.6, which is not excerpted in the papers, it makes the point that general purpose financial statements do not and cannot provide all of the information.
Yeah.
And I think what you were trying to insert at the beginning of 1.23
is that it
provides some but not all of the information. So that seems to already be covered by 1.6. And you're struggling to describe that it's the financial reports, and yet if you look at 1.12, which again is, you know, from the 2010, it says, provides information about the financial position. It's trying to say it's past events and it's the financial consequences. So I think we're creating trouble because we're looking at things in isolation rather than realizing that we already have them in this chapter. And maybe in trying to respond to the comment about can you tweak the examples, it then becomes unintended consequences.
I must admit, I like the extra example we've put in, but I'd happily lose the first sentence. Yeah. So if adding just an example without having the first sentence that somehow has frightened people, because adding that example does, I think, go quite a long way to responding to some people's concerns that the list we have there of examples is quite narrowly focused.
I just would prefer not to drop a corporate strategy into the conceptual framework at this point in time.
Let's just leave it as it is. Can we agree with that?
As in proposed by the staff?
Yeah.
Because I kind of like what Philippe suggested.
As it is in the expression.
Unchanged.
Unchanged.
From the ED.
Okay. Without the new words and without the strikeouts.
Okay. So I kind of like what Philippe suggested would be useful to assess.
I think we have that in 1.6, which you just don't have in front of you.
Okay, so can I see who agrees with my recommendations? Which is
all in favour, Martin? Martin would agree if he were here.
So the next section talks about stewardship and accountability. In pre-2010 framework, it used the terms stewardship and accountability interchangeably. The exposure draft proposed to reintroduce the term stewardship but was silent on accountability. And some respondents asked whether those terms differ or whether they are the same. So the responses to the exposure draft suggest that most respondents use those terms interchangeably, and there were only very few who expressed a preference for a particular term. For this reason, we recommend continuing using the term stewardship in the conceptual framework and indicating that there's no significant difference between those terms when using them in the context of the conceptual framework. It would also help to link the conceptual framework to the IFRS mission statement, IFRS Foundation mission statement, which talks about accountability. So question 3 asks whether you agree with this recommendation.
Yeah, I believe that, you know, when you look at that old 14, it is not the same. It just, it's closely linked, but stewardship is not the same as. As a result of stewardship, you have to be accountable, but it's not the same thing. Mm. And so I think we should solve it in a simple way, which is perhaps, I already made a suggestion for the wording in previous paragraphs, but when we could also put a footnote there just saying stewardship means the management of resources that are entrusted to one's care, which is almost directly from I think the British dictionary. And then it should be clear to everybody, rather than interchanging two terms that are not exactly the same.
So would you then explain accountability as well?
No.
No. So we wouldn't explain the link then?
Wouldn't.
No, I didn't. I mean, if we could start from a clean sheet of paper, I would avoid the whole term stewardship to begin with. And
yeah, that's what it says we did, you know, in the end. They came down to accountability and took out stewardship. But I agree with Hans, it's gone so far now. People start asking whether we mean something different.
If you take it out, then you get all these useless discussions. But I wouldn't think it's exactly the same thing.
I can accept you try to explain the notion of stewardship. But on the other hand, you know, we totally eliminate accountability notion or we're not agree with. It's because we have to think about anything in here to all over the world. People may use different technical terms or concepts, and even when in a similar or same language environment, people use the same terminology, but they interpret differently. So I will prefer to keep current status. That is, we use stewardship and accountability interchangeably. And I tell you the true story I once had when I was a PhD student in the 80s. That time, there was a huge debate about decision usefulness and accountability. And one of the most important supporters of accountability is American professor. He's a Japanese, Ijuri. And so I sent a specific letter to ask him, because he's Japanese. I said, Ijuri, Professor Ijuri, can you translate accountability into Chinese character? Because we share the same Chinese character. And he sent back a letter to me, a Chinese equivalent. And but in China, people have different translation. You know, some people say Ijuri is right. Others say you should translate accountability into stewardship type of notion. So, in conclusion, I will prefer to keep current status. You know, we not give a very clear preference either stewardship and accountability, because people have different interpretation about this, and there are common understanding among these two terms.
Does supporting the current status mean you support the change in 45B?
Yes. No. The change is.
Mary?
I agree with Hans that stewardship and accountability are not interchangeable, and therefore I would not make the change that is proposed in paragraph 45 of the paper. I think either we stay with the status quo, and paragraph 43 of the paper notes that currently neither the CF itself, the framework itself, nor the basis for the framework uses the term accountability. So either we just stay there, or if we feel we need to respond to the comments about accountability, I think it's more a statement that management is accountable to users about how the entity's resources have been used. Because that's, to me, stewardship is how well have you done with them.
Yeah.
Accountability is the fact that you must account for what you have done, tell you whether you've done it well, tell you whether you've done it poorly.
It's a consequence of stewardship.
It supports stewardship. You owe a duty of account. So I disagree with equating them. I think you have to have accountability before you can assess stewardship. Accountability, to me, supports supports the ability to assess the stewardship of management. I just don't know that at this point we need to get in there if we don't use accountability at all.
Mary, the problem is, you know, people in some jurisdictions interpret stewardship and accountability in the same way. They feel stewardship also includes accountability.
I agree.
Accountability also includes the stewardship side, as you say. So this is why...
But in the Chinese translation, do you use the term accountability for stewardship?
Some people, you know, use accountability, as you said. Other people focus
but
more
on
stewardship.
What is written? What is written in the Chinese concept? Or you don't have it?
No. As I said, some people
in the official translation, what is used?
More lenient to accountability, stewardship.
More to stewardship
side. Yeah. They feel stewardship include it, what you said, accountability.
But let's not do things that are clearly wrong. And equating stewardship to accountability is wrong.
I think
not a translation.
What I thought was interesting is both Mary and Weiguo were saying let's keep the status quo, and then suggesting doing completely different things to do that. And I think that illustrates the problem. The problem is that what staff are suggesting is that we fix the problem that some people equate the two things as the same by making them the same. Doing nothing means that we leave the status quo, which is that some people do it one way and some people do it the other way. And I would assume that we either need to say it is not accountability.
I would suggest that we include the definition of what stewardship means, which is to take care of somebody else's resources, basically. Even
I think
and whether stewardship includes accountability, as you say.
Would it help if we said stewardship is what management have to do? They have to look after the resources entrusted to them, and accountability is their duty to tell people how they have done their stewardship. No?
But this is exactly why in 2010 we decided not use both words. It's because people interpret differently. You like this interpretation, other people like other kinds of definition. This is the problem.
So, are you saying we should just stick with stewardship?
No. Either, no, we not use the word at all. This is 2010 version. The decision why we not use each stewardship accountability is because people interpret differently. And alternatively, I will accept 1.3, you know, the B.
So what 1.3 makes accountability mean the same as stewardship?
Roughly
the same. In the absence of 1.3, it's left to people's judgment to decide whether it's the same or not.
Well, except there's paragraph 14, isn't it? If you go to paragraph 42, I mean, and it quotes paragraph 14, which is already there.
No, that's the pre-2010. Gone.
Can I?
Yeah.
Just a brief comment on. I think we are discussing someone that is outside this room and just listening. They would find this discussion sincerely awkward. Yes. Because if I go to the preface to the IFRS, it says the official language for our standards is English. And the way we are discussing here is making two different words in English that have two different distinct meaning seem the same. It's very, very wrong. So I don't know why, and I agree totally with Mary, and I agree, I guess, with Hans. One alternative should be very clearly defining stewardship as it is in the English dictionary. If we find that it's necessary to mention accountability because we have in our mission statement, I would add, for instance, a footnote mentioning that in our mission statement we make reference to accountability. That means, according to the British dictionary.
Oh, no, let's not include footnotes.
Anyway,
we can never change the mission
statement. If people is dragging around. So I think we should stick to stewardship. If I translate to Portuguese or for Spanish or any Latin language, that two totally different meanings.
What is the translation?
Stewardship is similar to the English meaning because so, it's.
What is the term you use in Portuguese?
I double checked. I checked before. One is manage or
gerência.
Gerência, yes. One is gerência, and the other is accountability. It's just informing people. One is much more into information, it's accountability, and the other is the management itself in English.
It's
so
action and the other.
Exactly, exactly. And I went to the English dictionary. They have two different meanings. So why we are trying as accountants to change the meaning of the dictionary that so many people devote their lives to devote?
That's what we do.
The only reason I think of Mara is that in common practice they're being used interchangeably.
But it's wrong.
I don't think that means.
Yeah, but it's wrong. It's not. If I am in another country and the origin of the language is English, I have to use the original meaning of that word. It doesn't make any sense to me. For us, the ISB changes the meaning of the words. Make two words that are totally different in meaning look the same.
Can I just add?
Well, we are so used to distorting it.
Yeah, we know. And creating it.
One additional observation here is that in the investment world, the concept, and Hans, you alluded to this, you know, in these different codes. In the investment world, stewardship not only focuses on the responsibility to protect or preserve, but also to enhance.
Yeah, to create value.
Protection and enhancement. And so the question is are you considered, you know, to essentially be charged with enhancing the assets of the organization when you are going through this process of evaluating management? I don't know.
That's the whole idea, of course.
Yeah, it is, but I think if you just stick with the words that Marlo said, when you go to the dictionary, it doesn't talk about enhancement. It talks about responsibility to protect.
I suspect it depends which dictionary you get.
I guess.
Yeah. But I think the investor world thinks of it that way.
It implies acting in the best interest of your client, but Jesus Christ. Shall we come to a vote? So I have another proposal. My proposal would be to somewhere explain what stewardship really means, and I think we have no misunderstanding around the table about that. It is, in different words, managing somebody else's property in the best interest of somebody else. This is the fifth definition I give today, but I think you should just, you can just refer to a dictionary or whatever, and then not equate accountability with stewardship as I.
Then you have to explain why accountability is different from stewardship.
No, just be silent.
Yeah, but in many jurisdictions it is equivalent. So if we move from a situation, it's just by contrast with the existing framework where
now, now we don't mention it anywhere. So why would we now introduce another term?
Well, in the existing framework, it is mentioned.
No, no, this is an old framework. No. This is pre-2010.
It was there. It was there.
Yeah,
and we people will contrast the old and the new. And the old, it was said, those things are equivalent. So if we drop it and explain.
Well, perhaps you can put somewhere in the basis for conclusion, listen, stewardship implies that you are accountable for how you wealth, how you took care of.
That would do it, but I think we need to have this explanation of why we no longer.
Not in the definition, in the main text, we cannot.
This is fine.
Actually, the paragraph we used in the current the conceptual framework previously, not clearly say we define stewardship. The paragraph itself explained what stewardship or accountability means. You know, what I would not like you directly define, because people will define differently, you know, even among the two, you know, slight difference or totally different. I don't think it's necessary, you know.
I think one question that we probably have to answer the staff is, do we or don't we agree with their proposal to equate it? I think your suggestion to go on and give the proper definition of, you know, of stewardship to help, I can, at this point, you know, personal reaction is that that might be a consideration that we put in the basis as part of explaining, not only to make it clear, you know, the reason we went through these amendments was to make it clear that we, you know, that stewardship is part of the consideration. But I think at this point, if we're going to introduce a definition, A, it should be of stewardship, the thing we're trying to focus on, rather than accountability, which is not what started us down this road. But second, that it's maybe something, you know, that we do in the basics, explaining what objective it was we were trying to clarify.
I don't propose doing it in the main text.
Okay.
So we, I suppose we do not follow the staff's recommendation here to put the two terms in one sentence, but we, so we keep the language as it is. We just explain in the basis for conclusion what stewardship means and how it relates to our accountability, and I think then we'll have solved everything. Yeah?
Could we vote on that?
Yes.
Let's have a vote on this.
13 in favour.
Okay. All right.
Last section of this paper tries to address concerns that respondents had that there can be possible conflicts when trying to provide information both for assessment of cash flows and assessment of stewardship. But first of all, we'd like to note that we believe that there is significant overlap in information needed for both of these assessments. Both of them require information about past performance, and both of them require information about financial position at the end of the reporting period, which also reflects future to some extent future expectations. But we've identified some instances where information required for the assessment of stewardship may differ from information required for the assessment of future cash flows. For example, some information may not be as significant for assessing future cash flows, but because of its nature, it may be important for assessing stewardship. And the examples of such information may be disclosures of related party transactions or management remuneration. Also, in some cases, assessment of stewardship may require additional rather than different information. For example, for assessment of cash flows, a presentation of net result of discontinued operations may be sufficient, but to assess stewardship and of management, it may be necessary to present gross amounts and provide additional disclosures. The respondents to the exposure draft suggested some other possible conflicts, and the most common one that they talked about was in a link between selecting measurement basis and stewardship. And here the views differed, with some respondents thinking that historical cost measures provide more useful information for stewardship purposes because they are more verifiable and linked to the actual transaction undertaken by management, while others thought that in certain cases fair value measures may be more useful for assessing stewardship, for example, when it is assessed against market competitors. So to avoid any misunderstandings, we propose that the basis of conclusions on the revised conceptual framework should indicate that giving more prominence to stewardship does not imply preference for any particular measurement basis. Also, in the basis for conclusion, we recommend explaining how the board will deal with situation if any conflicts arise in the information requirements. And for this, we think that existing guidance in paragraph 1.8 is sufficient. That is, the board will have to exercise judgment and seek the information set that is intended to meet the needs of the maximum needs of user, maximum number of users in cost-beneficial ways. So question four asks whether you agree with these two recommendations.
Could I ask how many people raised this measurement question? I mean, was this a big deal? Or
it was quite a big deal.
It was a huge deal when I did outreach in Australia and New Zealand.
Pardon?
was a huge deal when I did outreach in Australia and New Zealand. It came up.
They thought it should, or they were concerned that some would.
They were concerned that people think that stewardship means we're going to use cost account, historical cost account.
In that case, it will not be superfluous.
Well, I just wonder if we're getting into an argument we should get into in the conceptual framework. I mean, we're setting out what we think stewardship information is. I mean, I could well argue that I'd give preference to current value accounting. But do we want to argue that even in the basis of a conceptual framework? I just think we should set out what we think the objective of financial reporting is and leave those arguments for other discussions. Let's see, got another opinion.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think, given the comments that I heard and the concern raised, a lot of people in Australia and New Zealand that I spoke to were concerned that people who were asking for the word stewardship to come back in were doing it with this objective in mind. And if that is indeed the case, I think it would be good to be clear that that wasn't why we put it in. So that's why
I mean, what's important is not their objective, but our objective.
Yeah, but the problem is going to be every time we write something, I don't want them pointing to the conceptual framework and said, because you put stewardship in, you can't do this.
Listen, there is a concern about hidden agendas, and I think we, in principle, I agree that we shouldn't be able, we should not even be in a position to clarify this, but I think it will take away needless concern.
It's going to look very funny in 15 or 20 years.
But it's a statement of fact, isn't it? We didn't have a particular objective of measurement when we said stewardship.
No, I'm not sure that we don't mean to imply something. In my mind, we might be implying current values are more relevant. Yeah. To make the statement that we're not implying anything.
I think it will depend on what we think the most useful information is to assess future cash flows and stewardship as we mean it.
Yeah.
How can you assess whether management has protected and enhanced the value of the company without knowing how those values have changed over time? At a minimum, you need disclosure. Mm. So in my mind, I agree with Hans, it begs the question as to whether there's a hidden agenda. Just from a logical standpoint, it I think militates strongly for knowing how values of assets and liabilities have changed over time.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but there certainly is a not insignificant number of people who seem to have this view that somehow, because it's a more verifiable, was the word you used, which is nice and neutral, number, that they think it is consistent with stewardship.
I agree with this recommendation to include this A, because I think there is concerns and it makes clear, okay, that was not the reason why we have increased stewardship. But B, I'm struggling a little bit with, because my understanding is the staff has not found any conflicting situations, but then we would, in the basis conclusion, give advice what we should do when we have said, and then saying, okay, that we will exercise judgment, which is, I think, no-brainer. So therefore, I think we don't have to include it. So we have not found it, and then we're saying, okay, if we found something, we will exercise judgment. For me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. I agree with that. I haven't looked at it, but I think that aid would be sufficient. Mary?
I think I'm pretty close to Martin. I did want to talk about the issue we were just discussing. I think in terms of A in the staff recommendation, I think we should have a statement that increasing the prominence of stewardship does not imply a preference for historical cost. That's the concern that was raised. That's the answer we have, and I don't think we should go on with the other part of it that says or current, because we're just trying to explain in the basis that the assertion that you summarized in paragraph 47 is incorrect. And it's not that the staff paper is incorrect, but what we're trying to do is respond to the assertion that there's a conflict between the two the different objectives. And that was something that we actually discussed when we developed the exposure draft, when we had the paper on long-term investing. And we said there isn't a conflict. There may be additional information needs that we respond to. So I think we should have something along the lines of A. It should say we disagree with those who said that there was a conflict, and it does not, therefore stewardship does not imply a preference for historical cost. And I don't think we should go on to say B for basically the same reasons Martin did, but if we've taken the conflict head on, B is actually less of an issue.
I find it a very good suggestion.
That's good.
Who can support Mary's suggestion, which is a slight adaptation of the staff recommendation?
12 in favor.
Good. Then we can go on to do the really important stuff, which is to discuss prudence.
Right, so we are now moving to agenda paper D on prudence. The existing conceptual framework does not include a reference to prudence. It was removed in 2010 because of the concern that it could be interpreted as inconsistent with neutrality. However, the removal of the term led to confusion, with many saying that, well, not perhaps many, but some say, going as far as saying that financial statements prepared in accordance with IFRS are imprudent. So the exposure draft proposed to include an explicit reference to prudence, described as an exercise of caution when making judgments under the conditions of uncertainty. The feedback to this proposal was mixed, while many agreed with the reintroduction of prudence described as caution. Some thought that the conceptual framework should introduce asymmetric prudence, that is, the type of prudence that requires systematic asymmetry in recognition of gains and losses. And some thought that it should not be included at all. So the first question that we address in this paper is whether the conceptual framework should include a reference to prudence. The board could consider not reintroducing it in any form that would respond to the concerns of those who think that it can be misinterpreted and misused. It would also mean that this section of the conceptual framework will stay converged with the FASB's concept statement. However, we cannot hide from the fact that the removal of prudence generated significant debate, and the feedback on both the discussion paper and the exposure drafts called for mainly for reintroduction of prudence. So we think that the concerns of those opponents of reintroducing prudence could be addressed in other ways that we'll talk later in the paper. The other suggestion that was made by a few respondents to the exposure drafts, and also by some members of the ASAF at the last ASAF meeting, was not to use the term prudence, but to describe it in terms of caution or care. Well, we think that it can address some of the misinterpretations associated with the term prudence. It will not necessarily make it clear cut. For example, when the term stewardship was removed and replaced with the description of what it encapsulates, it was mostly understood as a removal of the notion rather than a clarification, so it was not enough to make the board's intentions clear. Also, the newly chosen term might lead to similar misinterpretations. Because our standards are used in so many countries, without any additional research, it is hard to find a term that will be understood universally and will not have more pessimistic associations that we intend to convey. Also, prudence is used as a legal requirement in some jurisdictions, for example, the EU. So, for these reasons, we recommend not replacing the term with another and keeping the term prudence. So then the question is how to explain prudence. The exposure draft explained it as the exercise of caution, and many respondents supported this description. While some proposed introducing asymmetric prudence, they argued that it reflects the view that investors are more interested in downside risk than upside potential. They also thought that introducing asymmetric prudence means that it would help to ensure that investors will be paid on a prudent basis so that today's shareholders could not benefit at the expense of future shareholders, and similarly the thought that management's remuneration should be paid on a prudent basis. The staff believe we should continue to exclude asymmetric prudence from the conceptual framework. We think that systematic requirement for asymmetry will not necessarily help achieve relevant and faithful representation in all cases. It could also lead to greater subjectivity because the understanding of how much basis should be applied can differ. In respect to determining dividend and management remuneration on a prudent basis, we think that while the financial report can be used as inputs for these processes, it is not the objective of the financial reporting to determine the amount that can be used for this purpose without further analysis. And the decisions to distribute are largely dependent on local laws and regulations, while the decisions on remuneration depend largely on corporate governance arrangements. Also, in paragraph 16, we summarize different ways of how respondents propose to introduce asymmetric prudence, and they show that there is no single understanding of what asymmetric prudence means. So, for those reasons, we do not recommend introducing asymmetric prudence into the conceptual framework. And question one asks whether you agree that the revised conceptual framework should include a reference to prudence described as the exercise of caution when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty, as it was proposed in the exposure draft.
Agree.
Can we vote?
Yeah.
Question one.
All in favour?
Oh, sorry.
No. I think if the conceptual framework stopped there and did nothing else, I probably could swallow it. But, you know, at best it's, I think, reintroducing the potential for the notion of conservatism in accounting. And like it's redundant, and so it's just not necessary. If you put it in the basis, that's fine.
Okay. So, second question?
So, the second question discusses whether the conceptual framework should include an acknowledgement that accounting policies that treat gains or assets and losses or liabilities asymmetrically could be selected if their selection is intended to result in relevant information that faithfully represents what it purports to represent. And we are recommending including such acknowledgement. It was already included in the basis for conclusions on the exposure draft, and for many respondents it seemed to be the condition for supporting the introduction of prudence into the conceptual framework, but they said it was not visible enough. We think that including such acknowledgement into the conceptual framework will make it clear that such policies can only be selected on the condition that they will result in relevant information that faithfully represents what it purports to represent. It could also help to clarify that such policies will be consistent with neutrality. While some seem to associate neutrality with symmetry in recognition of gain and losses, the conceptual framework discusses neutrality differently, and it describes a neutral depiction as without bias in the selection or presentation of financial information. So in terms of selecting accounting policies, we think it just means that those policies are not intended to manipulate the opinions of users. So paragraph 43 proposes the wording that could be included into the conceptual framework, and question two asks whether you agree to include such acknowledgement into the conceptual framework.
Daryl?
So I don't disagree with the wording, and I also understand that this is something we've said before, and I think the overall principle of just bringing it forward from the basis to the body, I don't really have a problem with. What I did struggle with, and this made me worry that I was misunderstanding the wording, was the rationale in paragraph 37 for why people wanted this brought forward. So if I read the first sentence, we say the basic conclusions acknowledge the possibility that accounting policies would treat gains and losses asymmetrically. So I accept that part, that's what we're saying. Then we say that for some respondents, this acknowledgement is the condition for supporting the introduction of prudence. Now, it seems to me if we're thinking about asymmetric prudence, asymmetric prudence almost implies that you'll have asymmetric treatment. Now, we've rejected that, that's out the window, but if they were supporting this wording to help them understand prudence, or to help them accept prudence, it kind of almost seems to be the opposite. It seems to be exactly directly contradictory. I would have said that they might have supported that wording in the absence of prudence.
Now, many of those respondents actually support the introduction of cautious prudence, but what they were saying that our students, our standards already have some asymmetric treatment of gains and losses, acknowledging that it is possible to select such treatments would just make it consistent.
So were they concerned
that in certain cases such treatments could be selected?
Were they concerned that some accounting policies may be asymmetric, might have supported the view of asymmetric prudence?
I think they were saying that they'd be happy to have a definition of prudence being cautious prudence, as long as we also acknowledged that we would potentially sometimes select asymmetric recognition because that gave useful information.
But isn't
it very misleading to call that? Because when I think of, when you mention accounting policies, I always think about policies of preparers. And then not by of our standards, and here, I think what in BCT 2.14 what is meant is that we, as a standard setter, sometimes use different treatments of. Are those policies?
Principles, objectives, requirements.
So I think that is very misleading, and possibly some of our readers have thought, well, this allows me as a preparer to adopt policies that are asymmetric, and I don't think we would like that to happen.
We can be careful with the wording.
We can talk about asymmetric treatment of gains and losses, possibly.
But Anne was saying, was amplifying.
But it could be selected by the board, not by preparers.
Yes.
But going back,
policies preparers can select. If you're looking at IS 40, you have a choice of policy between one that is symmetrical and one that is arguably unsymmetrical.
But then that's still defined by the standard.
Yes. It's defined by the standard, but you then have a selection. You have the ability to select.
But going back, Anne, in response to Daryl's basic question, was saying that they supported cautious prudence, but they also wanted acknowledgement. I actually had read those responses as saying there's a group that really wanted us to do asymmetric prudence, but they were willing to concede and pull back and accept, you know, and support cautious prudence, so long as we acknowledge that asymmetrical prudence could be good sometimes. Now, I'm not of that view, but I think in that was my sense of what that view was, and I thought that the responses the staff just gave downplayed the views that were driving the staff to make this suggestion.
Could I add to that as well, because I'm a bit with you. And what worries
me... I'm not with that, but I just...
No, okay. But what worries me here is we're saying it explains neutrality. Now, I really think what we're saying is relevance and faithful representation trump neutrality. Because I think what we're doing is symmetrical going against neutrality.
That's not what neutrality means.
It's a difference between neutrality and unbiased.
I think that was partly why we were suggesting why paragraph 37 is there and why some respondents were saying this. I think it was because some people interpreted neutrality as meaning that we would always have to adopt symmetric accounting policies. And what we tried to explain in the basis for conclusions was that neutrality doesn't actually mean that we always have to go for symmetric accounting policies. We can sometimes go for asymmetric accounting policies. And what we're trying to do is to bring this up to our understanding
of
the actual...
But how is neutrality, though, different? How does it reconcile with asymmetric?
It, We explained, well, that was the what you signed, well, perhaps...
I can understand why it's an exception. I understand why it's an exception, yeah. But why is it consistent?
It's consistent because what we say is that you go about, you select an accounting policy and then you apply that in a neutral way. So you don't look to overstate or understate having selected, for example, historical cost. So historical cost is a valid decision to make, and then you apply historical cost neutrally.
And it's also saying that in selecting requirements to put into standards, neutral doesn't mean you have to treat gains in the same way as losses. It just means that when you're making that decision, you do it in an objective and neutral way, and you're not doing it in a way to try and influence users in one particular way or another. That's how we define neutrality in the framework. And it is not well understood, and we are guilty ourselves in some basis for conclusions of saying that an asymmetric treatment isn't consistent with neutrality, but that's not true the way that it's worded in the framework.
Concrete example, insurance, despite being current measurement and not historic cost, it recognizes day one losses, yep. Not day one profits. But when you measure those losses or profits, you still try to do it. So that's systematic. You still measure them in a neutral way.
Mm-hmm. But the first decision is not neutral. The second way is neutral.
No.
No, the first
I think that's the problem. And if you look at this, our standards as a whole, there are quite a few instances where we are asymmetric and where the consequence of all this asymmetry is that most academics will say there is inherent conservatism in accounting.
That's true.
The first decision is to select what's relevant.
Yep.
The first decision is to select what information is relevant. And then to faithfully reflect that piece of information, you need to be neutral. Neutrality is part of faithful representation.
It's true, but it's not the way it is. It doesn't communicate very well at this moment.
Yeah. But that's why we need the extra explanation so that people don't start, people stop thinking that neutrality means that ideally we would have symmetric. Because there'll be times when, the ideal answer is asymmetric.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm happy to base that the asymmetric decision on relevance and faithful representation. Yeah. But not on neutrality.
But neutrality is part of
it. I know the way you explain it, but the way I'd understood
faithful representation, though, means...
I'm explaining
it the
way...
It is a stretch.
Freedom from bias.
It is a stretch.
Good. Okay, and the faithful representation includes what Manuel said, but it's also freedom from bias, not just neutrality. So
what's freedom? Sorry.
Faithful representation.
Well, freedom from bias is part of neutrality, but that doesn't mean that means you don't select a treatment because you think that this particular treatment will encourage some sort of provision of pensions in some way rather
but
than
I could also
way.
Interpret that as saying I shouldn't treat gains and losses differently,
not the way it's worded in the framework, and we have to look at the words in the framework.
Well, the way you worded them, yes, you're right.
I mean, I didn't write.
They're already there.
They're your words. It's the board's words. That's what it says about neutrality.
The way this is written is what I'm talking about. It's paper.
Philippe?
I think what Manuel described was neutrality in measurement. When you come to measurement, you try to be neutral within the caution measurement provision, that you have to be cautious but neutral. But in the first instance, when we establish standards, we have to accept that we do not always look for symmetry. We have plenty of exceptions.
Yeah.
Recognition of assets versus recognition of liabilities, probability criteria, revenue recognition, we have a bias for a form of conservatism when we come to the exception for licenses, etc., etc. Insurance, we are not neutral. Let's accept it. So if we put neutrality as an overall concept, we do not comply with that concept. We comply with it when we come to measurement. We try to.
But, Philippe, may I remind you, neutrality is already in the current conceptual framework, and I would be a huge problem to take it out.
No, I'm not saying we should take it out. We should better explain at which stage
of our process, we introduce neutrality. Because if we say neutrality is our objective, let's accept we don't meet that objective in most cases, because we want to be more relevant, more faithful.
But it's not our objective, because we say in the framework that, you know, we're not trying to create financial statements that show the value of the entity. And that's what...
That neutrality would never show the value of the entity, because you have to recognize many more assets. So it's not the objective. I think it's not the same question, that measuring the value of the entity. We could have, without trying to measure the value of the entity, we could be very neutral and recognize losses and gains exactly on the same basis, same probability criteria. That would not give you the value of the entity either, because of unrecognized items. But,
you're not recognizing.
To better explain how we apply this concept of neutrality.
I think we're in danger of confusing the situation, because the word prudence, fine, you know, we've decided what that means, but we could end up confusing everything in terms of neutrality and asymmetry. Because I think Philippe's use of the word neutrality contradicts what's in the framework. Because you were saying that the initial decision about an accounting policy, perhaps that results in a historic cost, I think you're saying that's not neutral.
No, it's not what I said. He said the recognition criteria, the probability criteria, it's not about the measurement technique. But when we apply criteria for recognition, we have different criteria for assets and liabilities. Probability are different. When we decide to introduce a constraint on revenue recognition in revenue, that is a measurement which is asymmetric, because we recognize losses on contracts in a different manner from gains, potential gains on contracts. It's nothing to do with cost or fair value. Fair value, of course, would take care of that, Patrick, because we would be totally neutral with fair value. But we are in a dual measurement, mixed measurement system, where some of the measurements are asymmetric. I'm fine with it. But if we say our concept is neutrality as
some
a whole,
of the recognition, sorry.
Then it doesn't fit with recognition, probability, etc.
But the way neutrality is defined in the framework is unbiased, not slanted. And I agree that, I mean, is this that the board should set standards that produces unbiased without weight towards one side or another, or is it the application of the standards by preparers?
I think it's the framework is basically for us, right, first instance. We usually try to be neutral as much as possible, but we accept that sometimes, for good reasons, it is better to have a different approach, which is not neutral. Conservative. Let's accept it.
But that's not what neutral says.
It's a matter of words, maybe, but if I take a dictionary, I look at neutrality, I may have a different meaning.
But
we're talking about what you apply the neutrality to. The first step is to identify what phenomena you want to represent. In some cases, it might be phenomena that, you know, for historical cost, for instance, you might want to represent the historical cost of the asset. But to do that, to have a faithful representation of that, you need to apply the historical cost recognition and measurement requirements neutrally. I mean, it's possible that we can set those requirements in a neutral manner to reflect that phenomenon. But the question of which phenomena you're going to select is going to be a question of relevance. Which one is most relevant to users?
I think, again, I agree with neutrality when it comes to the application of the concept, i.e. the measurement phase of that application.
That's how the conceptual framework
and this is what we should try to communicate, but not necessarily at the time of recognition. Not necessarily at the time of recognizing losses earlier than gains sometimes, or on day one loss and not a day one gain. Then when you measure this loss again, you have to be neutral, fine, but at the time you make a decision whether or not you recognize a loss or a gain, maybe we are asymmetric, and it's a fact, we do.
We are asymmetric, but that doesn't mean that asymmetry could be seen by many as being not neutral.
I think this is exactly what the staff is trying to convey.
But this asymmetry may be seen as some as being not neutral.
Yeah, but what the staff are suggesting here is that that's not how the board will understand it, and we're trying to explain that that's not how the board will understand it.
I don't think that's crystal clear, though. In 5 or 10 years from now, I don't think that's going to be crystal clear. And I think Steve raises a very good point. I think we're in danger here of confusing.
Well, I think with a practical example, as I just mentioned with insurance, where you treat gains and losses differently, but when you measure them, you do that in a neutral fashion. I think that might clarify a lot. Or not? You look skeptical.
Well, I think Philippe's saying that the choice, that the fact that you recognize gains and losses differently is asymmetric and not neutral, and we are
that's how a lot of people would interpret
and indeed,
it.
Indeed, yes, and we're saying we need to clarify.
So we need to
that yeah. In the way that we use the term in the conceptual framework, that would be asymmetric and neutral.
Yeah.
I mean, the recognition case, I think what you do is you look and you say, actually, we think recognition of this asset is not going to provide relevant information. So that's your first test, which is what Manuel was talking about, looking at relevance first. If you decide it's not going to provide relevant information, then you don't even get to the faithful representation bit to sort of say...
I don't disagree with that. I think we have excellent reasons for doing that. But let's accept that this creates an asymmetry.
Yeah.
And then whenever you have asymmetry, some people can think that it is not neutral. A system which is asymmetric cannot be defined as being neutral as a whole.
Actually,
well, some people say that, but that's not how we want to set it up.
Let's try to communicate better.
But I, interestingly, rereading question two, I can agree with that. It's the bit that's explaining neutrality that upsets me. That we're not, if you're not writing, if you're only writing in what's in question two, mm-hmm. I don't have a problem. We do asymmetric standards, and we must do them on the basis of relevance and faithful representation, I would have thought. But then stretching that.
I don't understand what asymmetry is, because you've got to have some benchmark to assess whether you're treating something differently. So what is the benchmark?
Well,
what is symmetrical then?
That you treat gains and losses in the same way.
And what's a gain and what's a loss?
It's
an economic
gain or loss.
Fair value.
Yeah.
Economic value.
But even absent fair value, you could have a symmetry. A day one gain on the contract, we don't book a day one gain. We spread it over the contract. We take a day one loss, even though it is not yet fully realized. So. Oh, that is a symmetry. It's an historic cost system. It's a not fair value system.
Martin?
And I think we're really confusing people if we're saying that is neutral. Because if you're coming from a background like I come, which is German GAAP, it's clearly said, okay, we have a principle, which is it should be not neutral, which is gains and losses should be treated differently. Exactly that explains it. And if we're saying now, okay, it is... Neutrality is exactly when you do the opposite. I think we're confusing people totally.
Well,
maybe
exactly
we should explain. I understand what we're coming from, but we should not explain that with neutral. We should say, in certain circumstances, we acknowledge that we're doing that.
But listen, anything that we do that could be explained as asymmetry being at the core of our standards and being the guiding principle of our standards, I would vehemently disagree with, because it would completely throw us back ages in time. We should explain it as the exception rather than the rule.
But this does say that
the
yeah. rules are relevant.
Yeah, so I'm fine with the staff yeah. recommendation.
Relevance and faithful representation. Can't argue with that.
But maybe the point is that neutrality does not imply that we're going to treat all phenomena in the same way. We need to decide what phenomena we're going to be representing and how, and then we need to faithfully do that. But that does not mean that we're going to represent all phenomena in the same way, for instance, in terms of recognition and measurement.
Which is what question two says.
Yeah,
that's okay. It doesn't mention the word neutrality.
Well, the paragraph just above question two,
yeah.
which is how we were planning,
which
to
was
implement.
Our proposed wording, does. But if
But instead of using asymmetrically or just saying that neutrality does not imply that we're going to be using the same you know, recognition and measurement requirements for everything. We have to go back to what is relevant and how we can.
But wouldn't it be helpful if you argue it the other way around, that if you choose for an asymmetric treatment of asset or liability or gains or loss or whatever, that you will still be held to measure them in a neutral fashion. So
yeah.
I think that neutral is called measurement. It's probably better than saying neutral does not preclude asymmetric treatment.
Well, I think with this, we're trying to argue that neutrality is broader than just measurement, that it includes recognition. And so if you talk about them just in terms of measurement, I don't think that quite works in terms of what we're looking to do here in terms of and explaining neutrality.
We might be able to do something following Manuel's sort of suggestion about linking it into to how we how relevance and faithful representation interact, and maybe that will help us.
Maybe just quick on this, maybe if you start neutrality with the very end of the paragraph, stating that neutrality is intended to result in relevant information, and then goes to Manuel, could be an alternative.
Maybe.
I think this conversation has probably shown that this isn't necessarily going to make it easier for people to understand. I guess my concern, and maybe some of the suggestions that Hans has been making and the staff have been making would help, is by linking this in with asymmetry and knowing that a number of people who really felt we hadn't gone far enough for what they had hoped for by just focusing on the cautious element of prudence and wanting us to elevate the asymmetrical part that was on the basis. I think a lot of those people are ones who think that we should be more routinely using asymmetry. And I guess I just worry that it's a bit of a Trojan horse again, in the sense that they're going to constantly argue that it is more relevant from their perspective to have asymmetry on a much more systematic basis than what might be our intention through this clarification. Because these are going to be, you know, people who probably prefer not using fair value because they question its relevance, and they might be people who would have liked, you know, lifetime day one losses because they think it's more conservative. And this, they'll say it's more relevant information, so therefore there's now something in your conceptual framework that you should be looking at and considering when you're making this decision. But it's going to be used for a different purpose to what we might be intending it for, which is as a clarification.
I do not support the staff recommendation in 2. I can understand what the staff wants to do, which is to respond to comments that are comments in the basis about asymmetry were not very helpful. But I think the way we're proposing to do it, it will violate the rule of when in hole, stop digging. And it also will become and become hostage to fortune in the way that Sue described. I also feel very strongly that we shouldn't at the last minute start moving things into the text of the conceptual framework, which is the other key part of the staff's recommendation, that it was buried and not understood in the basis. It will all be clear if we put it in the text, and I don't think that's true. Reflecting on the discussion that we've had, I think there are a couple of issues that make me uncomfortable in the discussion that we had in the paper. One is that I think the paper repeats what some of the problem is looking back at the basis, you know, from the ED, of conflating the role of the board in the decisions with the role of the pairs. And I think Hans, for me, put his finger on it, even if it's something that's embedded in language today, about talking about accounting policies without identifying who's setting them. I think it might be helpful to try and, when we're talking about the boards, you know, even if we do it sometimes prescribe accounting policy choices, to talk about setting objectives, principles, requirements, rather than policies. But I think we can try to do better with our explanation. I think we should do it in the basis. And I think it should be along the lines of what has come out of some of our discussion, that the board considered but rejected introducing a version of prudence that is asymmetrical prudence as a, you know, this is in the basis, as a pervasive concept in the financial statements. We noted that, you know, that cautious prudence, which is what we have introduced, does not preclude the board, for example, on the basis of relevance and faithful representation, introducing making asymmetrical decisions, and maybe bringing out the one like Kahn's used about deciding to recognize losses but deciding not to recognize day one gains, but that asymmetry, but that cautious prudence does not mean that applying a requirement or applying a policy permits bias, you know, in the application of the policy, and that the board expressed a concern that asymmetry could be misunderstood as bias in application. And just, I think we should say it in the basis. I don't think we should stay it in the conceptual framework. And I think we should explain what we were doing and what we weren't doing. And I think it would be helpful to bring in those notions about we can, on the basis of, let's say, relevance and faithful representation, make a decision that does not treat, for example, day one gains and day one losses symmetrically, and then just stop there. One of the reasons I'm concerned about putting the comment in here is it will be cited as we were backing off of cautious prudence and, you know, gave legitimacy, and I think we will just rue the day if we put it in the conceptual framework.
I could live with that. All of that.
I sympathize with this.
I suppose too. Yeah, I suppose.
Jabu?
Thank you. I agree with this kind of approach. However, how about revising the sentence you are going to add in the basis for conclusion? Result in relevant, instead of resulting relevant information that faithfully represents, how about maybe some kind of a total amount of relevance and faithful representation and kind of a usefulness. The reason why I'm saying is many conventional idea, you know, as many board members already expressed, neutrality and asymmetric prudence does not go together. But if you can, you know, give some clarification, still asymmetric prudence is going consistent with the neutrality, then maybe you can use this kind of expression. However, if asymmetric prudence decreases some kind of neutrality, then maybe this sentence might not be a good idea. So that's what I'm saying. So another thing is, if we think asymmetric prudence is consistent with the neutrality, why not put this sentence into the body of the conceptual framework? You don't have to do this at the just only the basis for conclusions. And also the answer the exploration on the new idea on neutrality is quite seems to me that reminds me of kind of some Econ 101 class, or maybe some kind of neutrality of monetary policy. You know, if you just, you know, independent of influencing the different groups differently, if we do not that, then that kind of economic policy is neutral. So that's a very good try to resolve this all kind of a conflict and chaotic the situation now. I fully understand what you are trying to do. That's a really good, impressive. However, that kind of a finer some segregation between these difficult concepts, but you need to more clarification, because all accountants traditionally think this is not consistent with each other. So but very good choice. I would like to you to develop more, to make us, oh, you're right. Yeah, you are providing really insightful new idea to resolve this issue.
Tak.
Yes, I'm quite in same line with Mary and the Changgu. And actually, if I read the basis of current exposure draft, which is attached on the page 16, so actually it is well crafted, because we are going to use the wording on the paragraph BC 2.14. We are going to single out, but I don't think it's a good idea to single out this paragraph 2.14, because it is supported by the, it is a consequence of paragraph 2.12 and 2.13. And in this BC, you explained what the neutrality is all about in paragraphs 2.12. And then you showed the example of excessive symmetry neutrality. So if we accept some symmetry too much, it would not present the relevant information. So hence, we need to do the asymmetry. So therefore, it's a step by step. 2.12 explains what the neutrality is all about, and 2.13 explains the excessive symmetry. Doesn't make any sense. Therefore, we need asymmetry. So that's why it would work as a set. So if we single out only 2.14 on the body, it would mislead readers. So if you try to incorporate this idea, you should bring all these sentences as a set and bring it into the body.
And you agreed with Mary?
No, you didn't.
No, you won't explain.
Asymmetric interpretation of what she said. No, wait, go. And then we finish.
It wasn't mutual. I suppose now 90%, not 100. 90% means I will support to bring into text. This is the major, comment people strongly suggest us. And actually, when we develop DP, I also give similar comment. Secondly, I support, Ian, try to link the neutrality to, we select accounting policies, or we set accounting requirements sometimes asymmetrically. I think it is not so frank, acknowledgement. Sometimes we make decisions asymmetrically. As I agree with Manuel, it's because of relevance and other reasons, and they are not mutual at all. And so we have to understand among ourselves. If we feel it is asymmetrical, but it is neutral at all, I think it seems contradictory. And Sue's concern about whether this will run into a problem. People want us to have a systematic asymmetric the requirement. I think we already deny at all in the basis, have long descriptions, as I understand. And I don't think, of course, people have concern, but we clearly denied, board will not accept, consistent, asymmetrical treatment or standards. And my final point is whether we should distinguish between neutral requirement on recognition and measurement. I don't think it is necessary for us to make things so precise. People may interpret, any additions of an explanation and paragraph differently, and I will not support, we clearly say it. Sometimes we make decision on recognition asymmetrically, but you should measure it neutrally. I don't think it is necessary for us to do so.
Martin.
And I'm really confused now with all the discussion, but I really think it is not sufficient to have that only in the basins, because I think it is a
point which is made, at least in Europe, for many people, from politicians, from others, and I think we have to explain it more, because we are confusing ourselves here, I think. And I think what the staff has done in 35 really explains it very well, because man, from time to time, I think we're looking what users want kind of relevant information. Maybe in some times, okay, recognize losses earlier than gains, it is more relevant for users. But why? Because the users want to have an asymmetrical prudence. That is the reason for that. But we saying now we are neutral because we're looking at users. But it is really asymmetrical prudence what we are doing in these circumstances. And I don't know why we don't acknowledge that. When the reason is we say, okay, we don't do it. Because we are looking for relevant, faithful, which, but if users want it,
yeah.
But why does users want it? Because they prefer more asymmetrical prudence than not in certain circumstances. But why don't we acknowledge that in the framework? If that is the case, I think if users find it more relevant, maybe we follow that and doing it in our standards. But it is asymmetrical prudence. But because the preference for users is in certain circumstances to recognize losses earlier than gains. That is how it's a fact. But we say, no, that is not in our framework. We are neutral. Because neutral means, okay, we're listening to users. They want this more relevant information. But the underlying basis behind that is that users in certain circumstances prefer that. That is the reason why we are doing that. But I don't know why we don't acknowledge that, because we currently don't do that, and therefore we have from politicians, from others, which are not the accounting experts, saying, okay, you guys really don't recognize that many, many people in certain circumstances prefer that losses are recognized earlier than gains. That is a fact, and we are also doing that. But we don't saying that. That is a problem.
I mean, we could, if we put something in the body of the, I think there's a difference between saying that sometimes users want asymmetric information, and that's fine because we want to give them relevant
what they want
and what they want. Yeah. Yes, but if we put in asymmetric prudence as a something that was a goal in its own end, then we'd be saying we had to aim for that even if users didn't want it. I mean, we would be saying that is what users will always want, and it's not what they always want. So
my point is only to acknowledge that in the standard that we are doing this.
Because
we are not going to introduce the term asymmetric prudence. We just decided that.
I agree with
yes.
that. Yeah, but.
But.
Yeah, but Martin, the last
that
two
goes to the direction we're doing nothing, and then we're still facing all the problems which we get as feedback. And
the last two lines of paragraph 39 say the opposite to what you say. They say neutrality means we don't slant it to increase the probability that financial information will be received favorably or unfavorably by users.
But why do we have this problem in Europe? Because people speaking about accounting and saying ISP saying losses and gains is neutral. But this is not what we are doing in a lot of things. What Hans said with insurance, what we're doing with contingent asset, contingent liabilities. We don't doing that, but we're making that not accounting expert thinking. We are
having heard this whole discussion, I think we should probably do what the staff proposes, and they've heard elements in this discussion which hopefully might help them writing it down in a clear fashion. I think completely ducking the issue is not believable, and B, not helpful. I think we have a good definition of prudence which does not bring us into trouble acknowledging what we do in practice should also not bring us into problems. So I would propose that we agree with the staff's recommendation.
Hans, there's a big difference between what you just said and what the staff is recommending in question two. What you just said is to introduce into the body of the conceptual framework an acknowledgement that what we as the board may do is at times not symmetrical.
Yeah.
What the staff is recommending in question two is to put in a generic, not attributed to the board making decisions, that accounting policies may be selected.
We have to stay away from these accounting policies.
And it's not just the words accounting policies, it's just saying kind of blandly, sometimes asymmetrical choices may be made by someone.
I think we have to make clear that sometimes the board may make the decision for an asymmetrical treatment of one thing or another, having in mind that users find that relevant. Something to that effect. But indeed, stay away from this account.
I think we need to be really careful here, though, because it gets back to the point I raised earlier about IS40. Is people could interpret neutrality as meaning, even though the board has offered an accounting policy choice, you can never use it.
No.
Because you can never use something that gives you an asymmetric. Now, what I thought this sentence was doing was making it very clear that that's not the case.
Yeah.
Neutrality does not mean that. And I kind of thought that sentence was useful in understanding wherever we put it.
There are standard always overrides the concept.
But when a standard has a choice in it...
Yeah, even then, the standard says you have a choice, you have a choice. Yeah. I don't buy that argument at all.
No.
I think
we need to vote.
Solve this in drafting. What?
Yeah, could we vote on the staff recommendation as drafted and then...
No, let's vote on what I just concocted. As imprecise as it is, but it's just an adjustment of what you...
So the
board is not going to vote for a free choice of accounting policies.
So it's taking away the choice from... So this would only apply to the board, and we need to make it clear that it...
What about in cases when there is no standard that applies to a particular transaction? Would the preparers be able to use this to select an asymmetric accounting policy?
No.
I think that's
right. What I heard Hans say is he wants to suggest that there's an acknowledgement in the text that the board may make. He's saying he wants an acknowledgement in the text that the board may make for purposes of relevance and faithful representation a decision to set requirements that are not symmetrical.
And that I will certainly not open the door for preparers drafting asymmetric accounting policy.
Well, does that mean that if something isn't covered by a standard, they have to use fair value and recognize all assets and liabilities?
No. I think that's implicit in that, if we made that statement by that.
It is. Yeah. No, I don't think it's implicit in an acknowledgement that the, if... I don't think we should be doing this, but I think what Hans was suggesting is that to give it more prominence, the text of the framework should comment that the board may, because of relevance and faithful representation, for example, make decisions that are that treat items asymmetrically. It's an observation. It's not a concept that, it's an observation about the consequences. It's not a concept, is what he's saying. So that's why I think to Elena and Steve's question, it doesn't have, it doesn't bind preparers one way or another.
Would we be able to make that clear in the basis? Because I think it would be,
I think we should make it clear only in the basis, but...
It says in paragraph 37 that it's already in the basis. And this discussion is only about removing it from the basis up into the concepts, and I don't think we need to. That's basically where I fall in the argument.
But I also, the reason for my grumpiness about this is that when I reread the basis in light of this paper and the discussions, I think the basis is pretty murky as drafted.
I may not completely oversee all the consequences of taking out these accounting policies, but that gives me the shivers, written like this.
The concern that we would have is that if you, and I take Mary's point about perhaps sort of just stating it as a statement of fact that the board will sometimes select asymmetric accounting policies. I understand that. But if that was then interpreted by preparers when developing an accounting policy in the absence of a standard as meaning that they couldn't apply asymmetry, that would mean they would have to recognise...
What circumstances are we talking about?
For example, I don't know... I'm trying to think of it as an example.
Emissions trading.
You may end up sort of deciding that you have to recognise a particular asset because to do so would result in asymmetry, and in addition that you would have to recognise that asset at fair value because otherwise you're going to get asymmetric recognition of gains and losses.
When in whole, stop digging.
I don't see a way you could write this to make it apply only to the board, and in fact we went down that path in the discussion paper in two or three areas. We tried to limit things to the board, and people pushed back very hard, but the more we thought about it, also the more difficult we found it to actually think about how we would actually write it in the framework in a way that would be effective.
If I may come back to my quick comment, I think I like the intention of staff, and I think it would ease a little bit the application of the neutrality principle, is that we should start saying what's the objective for neutrality, because this is, so including Dara's comment, if we start saying that neutrality actually is intended to, as you say, result in relevant information that faithfully represent what reports represent, so it, this will apply to accounting definition of accounting policies as well. And then just invert the paragraph, and I think we will achieve exactly what we intend to achieve, stressing that it's intended to relevant and faithful representation.
Well, aren't we saying neutrality is nothing about symmetry or asymmetry at all?
That's what we're trying to explain. That's what we are missing.
Yes.
Because once you select what information is going to be most relevant to use the financial information, you need to represent that faithfully. Part of that is to represent it neutrally without bias.
Exactly.
The neutrality doesn't apply to the selection of the financial information. That's driven by what is relevant for users of financial information.
Exactly.
And accordingly, some based on what is relevant, the board may decide that to treat some phenomena differently to others.
With that, we capture both. We capture the need for the board to consider neutrality and also the preparers when they are defining accounting policies.
I'm not sure I'm completely in agreement with you, because when I look at the recognition criteria, it's stated in the conjunctive. It has to be both relevant and it also has to be a faithful representation.
Yeah.
Which means it has to be neutral, which means it has to be free from bias. Okay?
No, but we're not going to represent something that's not relevant. I mean, that's the point, because if something is not relevant, Pat, then we have nothing to apply the neutrality
to. But it has to be both.
And it has to be both. No, it has to be both. And so, for instance, if we're recognizing an asset at historical cost, we've made a decision that that is the most relevant information, and we would apply historical cost in a neutral way.
Maybe comment, and then we go to vote.
Well, I was going to make a suggestion, actually, not to vote, because what I have heard out of this makes me think that the words are going to matter a lot to people in terms of how they vote and what the nuance and suggestion is.
Bring it back.
And that, yes, to suggest that the staff take away the discussion and bring back.
And perhaps you could do something that makes it clear that, in practice, all the big asymmetry decisions are made by the board, and it's only in very rare cases that accounting policies would be.
But you want us to bring back something that includes something about it having asymmetric requirements sometimes in the body of the.
I don't know. My thought about bringing something back was, the staff may end up having to come back with a couple of alternatives, maybe something that try along Amaro's line, and we have to assess, is it too much of a rewrite of the conceptual framework in neutrality now, or does it accomplish our goal? And maybe reflecting on what you've heard about what kind of comment, or even what we would do if we just did something on the basis. But You've heard a lot about what we do and don't want to do, and there may be more than one way to do that.
I think it'd be useful for us just to establish that if we manage to get the wording right, would people object to having it actually in the body itself? So if it's worth us going away and doing it, it's actually most of you think we should just leave it in the basis.
It depends what it says, because some people are focusing on, can we just be clear that neutrality isn't really anything to do with symmetrical or not? Yeah. If you're just saying that, I don't think I care so much. But other variants are more acknowledging the asymmetry as an objective, which was more where Martin was coming from.
I suppose what I'm saying is, if we have people who say, actually, I don't want asymmetry anywhere near the main text itself, full stop, then it's not worth us doing. If a majority think that, it's not worth us doing anything. But if most of you think that actually there is something on that spectrum that I could support, then we can go away and we can try and develop something.
I think it's such a spectrum. I think it's such a big elephant in the room that completely ignoring it in the main text would be problematic.
It's too dangerous.
I think you have enough people who want to see you try. That you should try. I'm not sure you have a majority, but I think you have enough people who want to see you try. You should.
We will try.
Yeah. So, last question.
Shall we go just to the question without any tea up because we're running out of time?
I have a comment. I have a comment. No. It's very quick. I just think this should apply generally in the conceptual framework, not specifically to prudence. So
that's the only reason.
It might imply something else about everything.
Exactly. So I think this is far more important and should apply generally. So.
And I really don't think we should be applying it to prudence, because I think the problem is that the request is driven by people not wanting to see asymmetric prudence applied. We are applying it in the context of cautious prudence, and I think let's put it a different way. Cautious prudence is defined as the exercise of caution when making judgments. Now, I would think there's never going to be a standard that says you mustn't be cautious when exercising a judgment. So this seems I really don't like this in the context of prudence. I think it's an overreaction to the cautious prudence wording.
So actually, we do not want this.
I would not want this.
No, we do want this in the general.
We want the broader framework. Thing. Yes. We want the broader thing that says the conceptual framework is never overrides.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in the context, it almost undermines the definition we've just given of what we think.
So who agrees that this is superfluous? That's basically.
It applies to everything.
So does not recommend. Who does not support?
I wouldn't single out one thing.
To prudence, right?
This is a vote to don't do it.
Yeah.
Not support, yeah. I think it was 11 or 12.
Enough. Okay, let's try to finish this up before lunch.
So the next paper is the paper on measurement uncertainty, and we recommend moving the discussion of measurement uncertainty to faithful representation. That is, will be explained as a factor affecting faithful representation rather than relevance. And mostly in senses about the process of applying qualitative characteristics that we touched upon briefly, Manuel talked about it a bit, that when we select the most relevant piece of information, we select it on the basis that a faithful representation of that information can be provided. That's why we think that measurement uncertainty by itself is insufficient to affect relevance. It is only when we are trying to provide faithful representation of a particular measure that measurement uncertainty comes into place. And we think it affects faithful representation by, first of all, affecting whether a single amount can provide a faithful representation. Because in some cases, when measurement uncertainty is very high, a single amount will not represent the economic substance of a phenomenon. Also, we think it affects verifiability of of a measure, because measurement uncertainty arises when you use more unobservable inputs or less tested evaluation techniques. So that makes the measure different to verify. That's why it is more difficult to assure users that it provides a faithful representation. So question one asks whether you agree to describe measurement uncertainty as a factor affecting faithful representation rather than relevance.
I agree.
You want to discuss it?
Yeah. Just a comment. Why? Yeah, I understand your good analysis, but why we have changed established position? The measurement uncertainty is related to relevance.
This was just introduced as part of the exposure draft, and the feedback we had is that people find it counterintuitive. They thought that measurement uncertainty does not necessarily affect relevance, and they gave quite a number of examples. For example, insurance, which is very uncertain but is still relevant, or level 3 fair values, which again are very uncertain but still relevant. So that made us go through the process again and try to explain why measurement uncertainty, because I think we all agree that measurement uncertainty does make financial information less useful. It's just a matter of how we try to explain it.
However, still measurement uncertainty can affect relevance, but basically relatively maybe more on their faithful representation. However, still, that's not the independent event. I'm saying, if there's some big uncertainty, maybe that's related to outcome or existence, including the measurement uncertainties, then they might affect relevance.
I think the best example is intangibles, which are obviously very relevant to companies, but they are so impossible to measure that it's very hard to get a faithfully representative picture of them.
Doesn't mean they're not relevant.
So it's very much closer to faithful representation than to relevance.
I just wanted to qualify something Yelena has just said, because this discussion is in the existing framework. We expanded it in the ED, but in the framework, the existing framework, it is under relevance, it's not under faithful representation. And what we were trying to do in the ED was sort of minimise the changes to the existing text, and we expanded a bit, but relevance is where it is today. Of course, the tension is, in the previous version of the framework, this notion was more in faithful representation or rather.
Can we support this recommendation? Doesn't really
question
matter, Stephen.
This is question one.
Huh? Question one.
12. 13 in fact.
Question two.
A question to this person.
Question two proposes to talk about the trade-off. And we think that although it should not be described as it was described in the exposure draft, we think that we could describe that a trade-off similar to the pre-2010 trade-off between what it was relevance and reliability could now be described as existing between relevance and faithful representation. They're both needed to provide useful information. The framework also talks that neither faithful representation of a relevant phenomena or unfaithful representation of a relevant phenomenon helps make good decisions. So we think in certain cases a balance of those two characteristics may be needed. And while in certain, in most cases, faithful representation of the most relevant piece of information could be provided, when it is not the case, we think that those two characteristics may need to be balanced.
I agree the way you describe it. I would not use the term trade-off in the writing of the text, because it implies a systematic conflict. Sometimes you can have both relevance and faithful representation moving in parallel. Sometimes they're in conflict and you have to make a balanced choice. But the notion of trade-off seems to imply it is always in contradiction. So try to use something else.
Stephen?
My reason for being cautious in this area is I'm not sure what the implications of this are going to be. Let me give you a scenario. So we're explicitly recognizing measurement uncertainty, fine. We put it into faithful representation. That seems to me to make faithful representation closer to the old incorrect interpretation of reliability. Mm-hmm. And we then, so people used to think of reliability as being the precision, only measurement uncertainty. And we're making faithful representation, I think, therefore closer to that old notion. And the whole trade-off idea reinforces that. And I am very nervous that this is a backward step in emphasizing measurement uncertainty and putting it into faithful representation.
But by changing the label from, we changed the label from reliability to faithful representation because there were all these other things that were there within reliability that tended to get overlooked and only looking at measurement uncertainty. We've now got this new label, faithful representation, which sort of immediately signals to people that we're not only talking about measurement uncertainty. Measurement uncertainty is only one of the aspects of a faithful representation. So we've got complete neutral, free from error, etc. in there as well. So I think we're in somewhat of a different position to where we were with the old decision to move away from the term reliability. So I think sort of saying that it you end up with it only being all about measurement and certainty, I think that's wrong. I think it's much harder to come to that conclusion than it was with the old wording when we just talked about reliability.
Have we thought, if we do all of this change, have we thought how it might have affected past standard setting decisions? Is this have no effect, or
we feel tested it?
Yeah, I mean, what's the impact of this?
It depends whether you have factored in well, put it this way, have you been in situations where you've used measurement uncertainty as being one of the factors that you've considered in making a standard setting decision? And
what about the valuation of an unquoted equity investment? So we concluded fair value was the best way in which for us to measure that, and we wouldn't want cost. Does this change potentially if we were to redo that decision in the context of what we've got here? Could we change? Well,
we've tried to put wording in there that clarifies that in those situations, if you think that provides the most relevant information, the fact that there is a high degree of measurement uncertainty, so to some extent it reduces your ability to provide a faithful representation, but you still think that's providing the most relevant information, then you're going to go ahead and do it. So it's that whole sort of judgment and balancing. Yeah. It's not there to sort of preclude you. To me, it seems that it's obvious that measurement uncertainty is one of the factors that you consider when selecting a particular measurement basis or decisions to recognise the thing. The question is whether it should fit more in relevance or faithful representation. We actually think it fits better in faithful representation, and that actually I think it works better in faithful representation because actually you think about the relevance separately, and if you decided, well, this is going to be the most relevant thing about this, then actually the fact that it's going to be difficult to provide a faithful representation sort of weighs less heavily.
Yeah, I think it, if anything, would make the board focus more on what is the most relevant piece of information, putting aside questions of measurement uncertainty. And because you think about that first, and then only then consider whether there's so much measurement uncertainty that you can't give a faithful representation.
Is it the case that it has to be in one or the other? Could it be in both?
Well, we thought about describing it as being in both, didn't we, Elaine?
Steve,
well,
isn't
I send it to question.
The question is the major lawsuit that's overhanging a company. It's clearly relevant.
But as we talked about, there's
well,
so
the,
much...
the lawsuit is relevant, but is the measure of the lawsuit relevant? Because it's the measurement that we're focusing on.
Well, that's the uncertainty focuses on the measurement. And instead of uncertainty focusing on relevance, okay, which would then preclude any information, I guess, from being provided. So I think the staff has got this right here. I think the relevance is deals with the general quality of that information, and uncertainty is dealing with the measurement and the faithful representation aspect of it.
Okay, guys. Tak, Changwu.
Quickly, paragraph 42 confused me significantly. You are trying to explain what the trade-off is all about. But the trade-off is the things that you should compromise one thing to achieve the other. But it does not seem like the situation like this, because it says you should add additional disclosures. So, for example, if you think that the, in order to achieve the relevance, the fair value is the most suitable measurement. However, fair value has a significant measurement uncertainty. In that case, trade-off may work, because if we incorporate the measurement uncertainty into the face of financial statement, then it doesn't represent the faithful representation. So then you have to consider that you have to exercise judgment. In that case, you might give up using fair value, and instead you could use that cost, and then you compromise it, but instead you achieve the faithful representation. So trade-off is something like that, but your example says that you have to add additional disclosure. Additional disclosure is necessary anyway in both cases. So it has, in a sense, irrelevant to the trade-off relations.
Changwu, and then we...
Thank you. I totally agree with Steve's point. You know, this trade-off paragraph and the three-step approach in the 2.21. Relevance, faithful representation, step-by-step approach is already suggested in 2.21. It's a kind of sequence of process. First, you think about phenomena, and second step is about relevance. If the third step is the faithful representation, then it's okay. So if we think this is a paragraph as a new paragraph, then maybe this not be consistent with the three-step approach here. Because this is a kind of simultaneous, at the same time, we have to think about the relevance and faithful representation at the same time. So that's why Steve suggested an equity investment. In that case, we have to use the fair value, regardless of what kind of thing, because we have already the level 3 fair value measurement. So always is possible, faithful representation can be satisfied. So there is no need to any consideration of trade-off between these two items based on this current existing conceptual framework.
Peter, and then we vote.
The paper doesn't explain why the recommendation is to have this discussion in the basis rather than the body. When I was doing outreach on the discussion paper, this question of the trade-off came up a lot, and it was one of people's big objections to the sort of loss of the old reliability. Now, maybe as Steve said, they were thinking partly about the sort of measurement uncertainty rather than the broader aspects of faithful representation. But it was a big point that came up in the outreach, and I think people really felt that it was something that was missing if we didn't have some discussion in the body of a trade-off between something around these two factors.
Okay, can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
This is question one. Which one?
Two.
10.
Can I just ask board members to clarify, do you mean specifically in the basis rather than the body?
Well, that's what you meant.
In the body?
No, he was suggesting.
Well, I
the paper talks about the basis for conclusion, so.
Mm-hmm. I voted for as written.
As written. As written. Basis.
Okay, let's have lunch. We meet
question
again at
3. Sorry, we've got a couple of more questions.
Last question.
Oh, really?
We do actually have questions on the first day of the paper
as well.
So I don't know whether
confirming the existing proposals.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sorry?
We've actually got two questions left. We've got question three of this paper, and then we've got the question in the first paper.
In the first paper on confirming the existing proposals on primary users, well, basically that we are keeping the other proposals in chapters one and two.
So for agenda paper 10B has also got a question in it.
Can we shorten lunch? Can we shorten lunch and come back a bit earlier?
We should have lunch and come back, yeah.
We only talk 3 hours now.
Is this question three going to be a long-winded one?
I don't think so.
Maybe.
Everyone seems to be okay. Let's have a break.
Now,
okay. Let's continue our discussions. We're still at paper 10E. We're going to discuss question three.
So, question three is about whether the consultant should have a broader discussion of all types of uncertainty in chapter two. The exposure draft had no central discussion of different types of uncertainty, that is, existing uncertainty, outcome uncertainty, and measurement uncertainty in one central place. But we discussed measurement uncertainty in Chapter 2. Chapter 5 discussed how existence uncertainty and measurement uncertainty affect recognition decisions, and Chapter 6 discussed the role of outcome uncertainty and measurement uncertainty in measurement decisions. And some respondents pointed out that it is a bit strange to discuss one type of uncertainty in Chapter 2 and to completely ignore all the other types of uncertainty. So we think it would be helpful to discuss all types of uncertainty in Chapter 2. We propose to do it very briefly in the introduction. And we think it would help to put into context the discussion of qualitative characteristics of useful financial information, because inevitably uncertainty is part of the environment in which financial reporting operates, and it does affect the usefulness of financial information. We also think it would help to just read the document, because we'll have all the types of uncertainty discussed in one place, and then we could just cross-refer to it later in the text. The material we are proposing to reduce is not new. It has been exposed as part of the discussion paper and as part of the exposure draft. So we think it is more of an editorial change rather than substantive. Appendix B proposes how this material could be introduced into the introduction to Chapter 1. And question 3 asks whether you would agree to include such discussion in Chapter 2.
Billy? I think it's a very good improvement, it's a good idea, it will clarify our process, our thinking. The only point is about maybe the order in which you present in paragraph 2.3, little A, B and C. I'm not sure it is the most logical order, because it seems to me that outcome uncertainty is a result of both existence uncertainty and measurement uncertainty. So in the logical order, I would put first existence, then measurement and outcome as last being a factor of the two first items.
No, I also support the staff proposal.
And wanted to.
I don't think that outcome uncertainty is a result of measurement uncertainty. I think outcome uncertainty could contribute to measurement uncertainty,
wait a minute.
But not all.
What creates outcome uncertainty?
Risk.
Risk of what? Risk of which is captured by measurement or by existence? The risk that you are faced is the asset exists or doesn't exist, and the measurement of this asset doesn't capture everything that should be measured. As a result, you have some outcome, and the amounts that result are uncertain, this outcome uncertainty. It's about cash flows, right?
Yes.
Timing and amount.
It is. But it's the fact that you don't know for certain what the cash flows and the timing is going to be that means that there may be measurement uncertainty. There may not be.
If you have an observable price, for instance, of an equity investment, that would be, you wouldn't have any measurement uncertainty about
that. But you
that.
Would have outcome.
But there would be outcome uncertainty about, you know, what the.
You mean volatility? You mean future volatility?
Just risk.
Just uncertainty about what the cash flows are ultimately going to be.
Okay, that maybe you need to clarify when you mean by outcome uncertainty then, because it seems to me that the outcome is a product of, is the result of various elements of the equation. And timing is one, of course. And timing maybe is different from existence or measurement, because when you discount future liability at present value, if you don't know exactly the timing of this event, then you have outcome uncertainty. But it seems to me that both existence and measurement uncertainty create an uncertainty on the outcome.
I don't think it's measurement uncertainty that creates the outcome. I mean, Emmanuel's example, I think, is perfect. If you have an observable market price, there's no measurement uncertainty at all, but you don't know what the ultimate outcome is going to be.
If you estimate an accrual for litigation, you may know that it does.
But that's a case where you have outcome uncertainty and measurement uncertainty.
Why do you have outcome uncertainty if you are certain about the existence? But if your problem is measurement, you don't know how much. Then you have outcome uncertainty. The cash flows are uncertain because of this measurement problem. Timing could create also some outcome uncertainty because if you discount, present value might differ.
I think we think of outcome uncertainty just as being the the base case where you don't know what the inflows or outflows
are. I don't disagree with that, but the question is why do you not don't know? Why is it that you don't know?
It's an equity instrument, so you don't know what the performance of the company is going to be, the dividends that are going to be paid, etc.
I mean, because in fact for most things you don't actually know what the inflows and outflows are actually going to be. And sometimes that creates measurement uncertainty, but in other cases it doesn't if there are observable prices.
I'm looking at the draft or the 2013 ED in paragraph 6.56 where it describes these concepts. And I think, Philippe, the staff pointed out, or actually Peter just pointed out, that sometimes outcome uncertainty does sometimes contribute to measurement uncertainty. And it's in the example where you have this level 3 type scenario where the uncertainty of the cash flows contributes ultimately to the measurement. Okay, you may have an untested model, for example. So, but normally, as Manuel is saying, if you have a price that's observable, now there is some potential uncertainty about whether or not those cash flows are collected. But typically, they're not the same.
Thank you. I have two comments. Basically, I start proposal. And first, I discussed a similar issue with Peter. It related to how will we describe outcome uncertainty compared to measurement uncertainty. If we describe outcome uncertainty as external reality, by contrast, discuss measurement uncertainty as a accounting in the process related to that, then outcome uncertainty should be the second. If we describe outcome uncertainty as a result of all of the accounting process, then Philippe's idea is right. You know, you have the existing uncertainty and you face measurement uncertainty, you combine different account techniques, come out the result, which may be variance. So it depends on how we describe those uncertainty. If we describe them purely external, you know, and then I would feel the Philippe is right. But if we feel measurement uncertainty is much more related to our accounting process, you know, then the current list is right. You know, I'm not sure how we describe it. And my second point, should the staff respond? First one?
Was there a question?
Yeah, there are two different kinds of description of outcome and measurement uncertainty, whether they are external or it is process of accounting. It's a accounting process.
So the way that I would look at outcome uncertainty, and my colleagues can disagree with me, but That's going to be a characteristic of the thing that you're looking at.
So you're looking
at an equity investment, and by its nature, by its characteristics, that's going to be inherently uncertain. You might be able to measure that quite with a level 1 input, which means that the measurement of that uncertainty is not the measurement is not that uncertain, but the outcomes in terms of changes in the stock price is still going to be riskier.
Okay, we can discuss later. The my second point is more. Oh, you have not finished?
No, no. I was just wondering if that answered your question or your.
Clearly not.
No, not exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not that. I like Peter's explanation to me before. Don't worry. Don't worry. Yeah.
Keep out of it, Manuel.
Okay. My second comment is much more editorial. That is, firstly, I would suggest you know the link back to the chapter one, because chapter one. But when we discuss 2.3, chapter 1 discuss about the OB11, you know, the to a large extent the financial reporting are based on estimate, judgment, model rather than exact depiction. And I would suggest either in the text or in the basis, link back, because we're in the final stage, it's better to link back to the first chapter.
Yeah.
And my second suggestion is related to 2.3b. 2.3a, we have resource and claim. But 2.b doesn't only have resource, you know, inflows and outflows of resource. And in my view, you know, what we try to say here not only include resource, but also claim. And if that is the case, you know, I would rather make it clearer. I discussed privately with Peter different versions, but what I want to confirm from you is whether, you know, the second part include both claim and resource. If that is the case, I would rather prefer to make it clearer.
It might be easier to change A to say about whether a right or a claim exists. And then we've got the inflows and outflows that represent rights and are the result of rights and claims in B. But yeah, they are. They're both made.
Yeah, what I want to confirm is include the claim in the second part.
Yeah.
That's all. We can discuss how to word it.
Yeah. Stephen?
I don't understand what the link is between outcome uncertainty and qualitative characteristics. What this chapter is about. So if I have high outcome uncertainty, what does that do in terms of relevance and faithful representation?
I guess it just poses greater challenges.
Does it?
Well, if everything was certain, we...
Well, I'm talking only about outcome uncertainty. So let's suppose there is no measurement uncertainty because I've got a quoted price. There's higher outcome uncertainty. What's the implications of having higher or lower riskiness of the asset in terms of relevance and faithful representation?
Well, for faithful representation, you might want more disclosures to give people a clue that there's high outcome uncertainty.
Might it change the information that's relevant?
But I guess isn't your question going to be answered in subsequent chapters when we expand on...
Right, which is my point, because yeah. I don't see it belongs in this chapter.
Or we will
I'm happy to have a discussion about these different types of uncertainty, and I'm very happy for it to be in the same place, but I don't see why it is relevant for chapter two. I think it's just going to confuse things because people will then think that outcome uncertainty in some way changes the relevance and faithful representation of the information. Which is why I asked, how would you link it between the two?
It changes what is relevant.
Mary?
I think I'm where Steve is. I'd come at it slightly differently in terms of saying, remember that chapters 1 and chapter 2 are the ones we didn't want to touch, and we were only going to open them for the bare minimum of the things that we absolutely thought were necessary. And, you know, right now the only information I have is that some people pointed out that this, you know, that we didn't frame it, even though we have it in different places. So I don't have a good sense of what the arguments were that were raised and whether they were fundamental or just it would be tidier if. But I think if we go back to the basics of 1 and 2, we're only, you know, we're not touching or only touching as necessary. If this is just a cleanup nice to have, before we go through the whole, let's think about what it means to say this is the context in which we assess all the qualitative characteristics. Let's just not do it. It might not be a perfectly tidy, you know, document, but the discussion seems relevant. Ironic that I choose that word, but the discussion seemed to be in the right place when we were having on the related issues where they were, and I don't feel a need to pull them forward and work through if there are any implications of using them as framing environment in which we consider all these things. So I just say, just don't do it.
It did feel a bit disjointed. I was conscious drafting the ED, but we had these discussions of different types of uncertainty, and describing them or linking them, it seemed awkward. It didn't flow well. But I agree, in that sense, it's a sort of nice to have rather than the changing what would be the outcome.
And we may be doing it for just smoothness and, you know, I think going back.
But if I interpret what you're saying, Mary, you're not objecting to having this together in some place, somewhere, just not here.
I'm particularly object to having it here. Yeah. And if it isn't absolutely compelling that we need to make a change at this stage, then let's not do it generally, especially to chapters 1 and 2. I mean, a new discussion of exactly what the definitions of these are and how they interact and how they affect different aspects, if it hasn't proved critical in the development of the conceptual framework, unless I hear more about what the comments were and the concerns that were raised, I don't think I'd do it.
That's the problem, this proposal. Who can support the staff recommendation?
7.
That's not enough, is it?
Who can support the staff proposal in line with what Steve was saying, if it was brought in later in the... Is that what you were essentially saying? Is it
just agree with the content but not
placement?
Okay. I mean, we already have it elsewhere in the document, and I think the discussion of the different types of uncertainty elsewhere in the document is actually really essential. So when we're starting talking about the measurement chapter, we talk there to some extent about the difference between measurement uncertainty and outcome uncertainty. I think that's an important distinction to make. So I think we still probably do need that discussion elsewhere in the chapter. I think our plan was just to bring it up into the front to put it all into one place, but perhaps at this stage, if you could say, well, we don't want it in the front, and then when we talk about the other sections, we can say, oh, by the way, this is where we talk about this particular type of uncertainty in this section, and we can discuss that then.
All right, let's solve it that way. Okay, then we go back to
Agenda paper 10B, and we go back to paragraph 7, which summarizes staff recommendations on other issues that receive significant feedback, but we do not think that we need to consider them at this stage. And so we're asking whether you agree with our recommendations to retain the existing descriptions of the primary user group in chapter 1, to confirm that an explicit statement that a faithful representation represents the substance of an economic phenomenon instead of merely representing its legal form should be included in the conceptual framework, and to confirm that relevant and faithful representation should continue to be identified as the two fundamental qualitative characteristics of useful financial information.
I agree with the recommendations here. I A, B, and C, I don't have a major problem or issue. In the drafting, though, the one topic that you didn't raise in this area was the substance versus form. And in reading one of the comment letters, an issue that was highlighted, which I think is spot on, has to do with the fact that in some cases, legal form and substance are identical. In some cases, they differ. And when they differ, I think it makes sense that you look at the substance.
Yeah, I mentioned in drafting that we will look into those comments and we'll try to draft it differently to make sure that both will be looked at and they're not mutually exclusive.
Okay, and the second point there is that in some cases, the legal form is the substance. In other words, you can't ignore the actual rights or obligations driven by a contract, so that is the substance. So when you say it's merely representing its legal form, I think it's kind of a trite description of the issue.
Yeah, I agree with the proposal, but I think there was a problem about the location of this discussion of substance and legal form much later in the exposure draft. I think it was in chapter 6 maybe, and not up front. So we had the objectives on qualitative characteristics up front, and then we had the explanation of this apparent conflict sometimes between substance and form much later in the text. So either way, we could reconsider the location of that discussion about substance versus form so that it is more directly linked to the faithful representation without having to go back to 50 pages later.
No, I think they're different.
Why are they different?
I think, if I remember rightly, the discussion you're referring to, Philippe, was the discussion that we had in chapter 4 when we were talking about how to identify the rights that an entity has. And in that, we referred back to the substance over form discussion in the front. So if you like, and we do this elsewhere in the conceptual framework, we set up the qualitative characteristics and the description, including substance over form, and then we refer back to those QCs when talking about...
Yeah, but there was a problem of cross-index because you first find the discussion of substance over form in chapter 2, I think, and then there is no explanation. And then you go to chapter 4, where you have a much... elaborated discussion when it comes to rights, and this link between the two, you find it when you go to chapter 4, and then, but not from chapter 2 to chapter 4. I think there was a kind of cross-index problem here.
I think I have no problem.
Cross-reference, not cross-index.
The discussion, why we have this discussion is because in all the conceptual framework, substance or form is part of reliability. Clearly, then when we develop 2010, we move this into the basis. People will not have any problems about ideas that people just suggest as supreme to the face. And I think it is right. Okay. But as to the discussions in element and the liability chapter or any other chapters, is the application of the basic idea in chapter 2.
My point, Hugo, is that if I remember correctly, the first time we speak about substance or versus form is about faithful representation, right? And we don't explain more, we just say. And the only discussion really that explains this concept is in chapter 4. And there is no cross-reference between the two. And this is my recollection of having done the outreach and presentation on the conceptual framework exposure part. And people did not understand why there was those two elements of discussion without any linkage between the two.
I'm sure we can look at linking them.
Okay, can we...
Just quick. We heard a comment which talks about the interaction between our conceptual framework and the mission statement. And we discussed it in the previous meeting. And is there any possibility that we refer to mission statement, or if it's difficult to refer to the mission statement, then is there any chance to incorporate some wording of mission statement?
It is already included to some extent in the introduction to the conceptual framework.
Right.
So it does talk about this link.
Link already.
Yes, so it's IN 5 paragraph.
Okay.
Who supports the staff recommendation?
All in favour.
Okay, then thank you. Thank the conceptual framework team.